there are still members on the way, one or two, but members, you are most welcome. Secondly, can I extend a special word of welcome to the Deputy Minister of Public Enterprises, Honourable Ben Martens. We're very glad to see you in the meeting with us with the two annual reports of the two state-owned entities this morning, Comrade Martens. And also welcome to all the members of the DPE. Then a special word of welcome to the South African Express executive management, the chairperson of the board, the chief executive officer, and all other members of the South African Express. We had you before us just recently, if I look at my notes, on the 26th of October, nearly 2010.
2010.
Yeah, 2010. It's a year ago. So welcome back. I remember vividly that meeting. It was quite a good report that you presented. And today we've studied the report, and I think it's different circumstances. And I don't want to preempt the meeting, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough meeting today. But you're most welcome. I'm going to ask you shortly to introduce yourselves and your team. Members, we have two annual reports today. The first is South African Express and thereafter SAFCOL. And the time earmarked for this meeting is from 9:30, it's about 5 minutes ago, to 11:15. Then we take a short tea break or body break, and then we will start with the SAFCOL annual report from 11:30 to 1 o'clock. So I'm going to make an appeal to members and to South African Airways to be very brief in your presentation. I can't remember that we've received the slides, the presentation. So we haven't received the presentation, but I'm going to appeal to you to indicate when you introduce yourself how long you're going to take, but as short as possible. But please indicate us how much time you're going to take. And then to members, let's focus on the real key issues, because we have two annual reports before us today. Then I'm going to ask for members to introduce themselves. I'm going to start with members of Parliament. My name is Gerard Koornhof. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee.
I'm Gloria Borman, a member of the committee.
Good morning. Aubrey Mugwena, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Rose Soto, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning. My name is Chris Khululu. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Peter van Dalen. I'm also a member of this committee. Thank you.
Marnie van Dijk, member of the committee.
Bayandam Zonelli from
the... that is the portfolio committee. I'm going to ask... you're not promoted yet. But then I'm going to ask the members of the DPE and the ministerial staff.
Bayandam Zonelli from Minister.
Haruk Boskadi, researcher for the committee.
Lelash Magove, Chief Director, Legal DPE.
Edwin Bessa, Financial Analyst, DPE.
Morning, Raisibe Dipule, Deputy Director General, responsible for transport enterprises in the department.
Good morning, Chairperson. I fall between the two. I'm a Member of Parliament and Deputy Minister of Public Enterprises.
I'm going to ask the media and PMG at the back just to introduce them yourselves.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Murdoch from PMG.
Sir, from DPE.
In the Insul Business Day.
Thank you, and Honourable Connie September, also a member of the committee, is just tonight. You're welcome, Honourable September. Now we all know one another, so I'm handing over to the chairperson of the board of South African Express.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Lillian Boyle. As you know, we have met before, and with me from SA Express is Masasu Buzo. Masasu is also an independent non-executive director and who chairs our Audit and Risk Committee. In Atiya Changa, you know the Chief Executive, S.D. Wellman, General Manager of Business Development, and Ayando Ncho, Divisional Manager of Finance. That is our team, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we're going to start. Is there anything else that any member wants to add? What we're going to do is you indicate to us how long you're going to take. You do the presentation. We open it up for questions and answers. At the end, I'm going to give DPE also opportunity just at the end to make a closing remark, your input, and then we close the session. Chairperson, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Inati and Shanga will do the presentation.
Honourable Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, apologies, I should have started with the deputy the time. Chairperson will take probably with everything about 40 minutes, but we'll try and speed it up.
Can I ask you to, a normal circumstances, we use 40 minutes. I see you have in the 50 slides.
Yeah.
If you can speed it up as soon as,
yes.
As fast as you can.
Yes.
Thank you.
Some are just there, just going to set us up. So. All right. I should have started with the Deputy Minister and I guess all protocol observed. Just the 20. Chairperson, today will be presenting the annual financial results for the financial year 2010-11, which is the year that ended on the 31st of March 2011. The areas we will be covering will be the overview and the quick synopsis of where we are, financial performance, some of the burning issues, and the future. Just on who we are, this is just a slide that shows that we've got a vision to be the most successful regional airline, providing the best service to our customers, whilst optimizing profits, meaning we don't want to be an unprofitable business. The aspirations, we want to great place to work for, and some of them are already there. I won't read everything that's on the slide for time. What makes us different is our frequency, availability, and time. Time is defined in two ways. There's time, the times of days that we fly, and being on time. Our brand is, we fly for you. That's our brand expression. The customer is the most important person in our business. Strategic focus, we consolidate in the domestic market. We want to build a sustainable cargo business, improve direct channels, still implement an intra-Africa strategy, improve service delivery and people, human capital development. 2010. It was really a year where we saw the price of Brent crude going up by $20, and of course for us every dollar is probably equal to about five million rand on cost if we work it out. Of course, Asia. Still did very well due to some low-cost airlines that are operating there. Africa is still a closed sky. We still cannot fly over certain parts. There's still a lot of protection by certain countries. And we've seen that, and we'll talk about that a little bit when we talk about the DRC. We've seen a very slow economic growth in the world, and the travel costs continue to increase. And the cost from some businesses, especially those that could be classified as monopolistic, continue to be high. That's our route network quickly. The blue lines are all domestic, and then the red lines are regional. We fly 9 domestic routes and 4 regional from Joburg, and then also from Cape Town we fly 4 domestic and 3 regionals, and then also Durban we fly 4 domestic routes. In terms of market share, 2010 saw, it's even though the passenger numbers will show that we've grown year on year, but in terms of with the introduction of new players in the market, you'll see that our market share is sitting at 9.9%. That's throughout the country. It's not on the routes that we fly. Our footprint is that there's only one province, and we're not really proud of it, that we don't fly to, and that's northwest. We fly to the other 8 provinces. Northwest is probably Sun City and Mafeking, and those are some of the areas that we are sort of looking at right now. In terms of employee profile, we employ on the 31st of March we employed about 1,020 employees. Demographics is 57% black, 43% white, and 36% female. The challenges we're still experiencing is around the pilot and some technicians. Technicians is improving a lot, but pilots still continue to be mainly male and white. But we'll talk about what we are doing to try and improve that when we talk about the new growth plan. In terms of some highlights of 2010-11, technical reliability, we won an award again from Bombardier for being the most reliable in that aircraft range. And this is an international award, being awarded to us in Canada. We managed to step into the Cape Town Durban route in January of last year. It's a challenge. We're not getting all the support we're looking for, but we continue to fly that, and we continue to look to review it. We got our fleet renewal approved by both from a PFMA point of view and by our board. So it's, we are in the process of implementing that. We implemented some serious development of employees, both the skills development and MTP, management development program, and the strong cadet program in the country. Some of the challenges we faced, the fleet reliability, and it's different from the technical reliability slightly. Our aircraft were starting to, are aging, and so it's, they tend to stay longer when they go in for a service. And nothing to be nervous about. They're fine, nothing wrong with them. But we tend to, instead of spending 25 days when they're doing a C-check, they could spend maybe 40 or so days because we have to do more work because they're aging. But we are going to be over that soon as we are introducing our new fleet. Now, we had 2 incidents last year. The first one was in Windhoek, where the front wheel did not retract, and that cost. Basically, the aircraft was grounded for about 6 months, which meant we were one aircraft short. And then 3 months later, we also got into another minor incident where in Kimberley we hit an ADFAC at around 6 o'clock on the runway, and that basically, again, took away the nose wheel of the aircraft. So we ended up with 2 aircraft that were not operational for about six months, and it's difficult to replace aircraft. So we saw our on-time performance being affected, because we could not meet the full schedule all the time. We basically ran out of the aircraft that we would normally call our schedule recovery. Our schedule recovery aircraft.
Just to switch off the cell phones. The moment you speak and the cell phone is on next to the mic, it starts to interfere.
All right. And then one of the low light we had last year is our operation in the Congo Express, and we'll talk about it a little bit more as we go further. Some of the synopsis, revenue growth, we saw a 2.1% revenue growth. We increased the passengers by 1% compared to the previous year. We increased load factors by 300 basis points. We increased the fleet from 25 to 27. And then the number of bags mishandled, the 1,000 packs, is sitting at 0.38. Now, you'll see that there's a star, and that star means those are the ones that actually get reported by passengers. Though this number, I mean, I can split this number into two. There's stuff happening in Johannesburg, which would actually be a higher number, but then at outstations it's much lower. So the number is basically being affected by what's happening at OR Tambo. And where OR Tambo, the biggest challenge is bags transferring, especially from overseas countries and going overseas. Flights like Botswana, etc., because those bags get to wait for a while, and that's where pilferage might be experienced, and so on. We continue to place people there to assist us, but you know, it's still there. Revenue per available seat kilometer, that's just a unit, meaning that for every kilometer we travel, it costs us about 94 cents. We make a revenue of about 94 cents. And then in terms of cost, it costs us about 68 cents. But that's excluding, actually, fuel. No. One-time performance on the 15-minute margin or allowance, we're sitting at 85%. And then operating profit, the final number, was sitting at 3.1%. These are some of our KPIs. I'm not going to cover all of them, but it shows that we didn't meet all our KPIs. We met six and they didn't meet the other eight. Most of them are related. If you don't make the turnover, you'll see that the bulk of them are linked. I'll give over quickly to Ms. Hellman.
Thank you. On the total revenue, and this does not relate to the passenger revenue that was displayed within the synopsis, on the total turnover, we had an increase of 5% compared to the prior financial year. However, this deviated negatively to the budget by 16%. On total operating costs, we experienced a 13% increase, and I'll go through the breakdown of that in the next slide. And that was a positive variance to the budget by 3%. The net profit after tax on $51 million was a 78% negative variance to the budget and an 80% decrease from the prior year. If we dig into the details on our total turnover, that's made up of passenger revenue, cargo, and other income. The other income bulk refers to the World Cup revenue for carrying the teams, and we experienced a 5% increase overall on a total turnover level. On a salary bill, our breakdown was a $383 million compared to a budget of $378. The negative variance in the salary bill relates to the upskill program that Inati referred to, especially in the technical area. On the ground support and passenger handling, the amount ended at 239 compared to a budget of 213 and a prior year amount of 167. This amount has also been increased due to the increases of AXA that was passed on last year. The fuel bill jumped up by close to 100 million from 297 to 400 with a negative variance to the budget of 387. Our training expenses remained on a well-balanced number to our total salary bill. And the total expenses, which includes non-operating expenses, increased by 14% compared to the prior year, and it was 3% below our budget. The net profit after tax is a $51 million, compared to the 238 and the 250 that was reported in the year before. If we dig into the breakdown of the cost, the aircraft incident that was reported within the synopsis and the low lights, the ad hoc leases relating to those incidents to replace the scheduled fleet amounted to 8.2 and an increased fuel burn of the bigger aircraft by 3.1 million. The increased flight time on the rest of the fleet amounted to a 1.6 million, which totaled to a $15 million that related to the incident. The unavoidable cost in services and support to the Congo Express joint venture exceeded $35 million, and then additional modifications to the aging fleet, which was not budgeted, is a $3.27 million. The further preparation for the World Cup to carry the teams was to move C-check planning forward to ensure that there's no disruption to the World Cup schedule, and this totaled $6.8 million. The total variance to the budget was a $16 million that was explained in the slide before. If we go into the balance sheet, the major change is the fleet that is held for sale. That's the non-current asset line that is appearing on the annual report as well. And the fleet is held for sale in totality, the Dash 8, as well as the CRJ 200. In our equity line, it has increased by 4% year on year, and liabilities have increased by 50%. The increase in the liabilities relates to a $200 million revolving credit loan that was obtained from Nedbank as contained within the annual report. If we look into the cash flow statement, the net increase compared to the prior year before, we increased cash by $12 million compared to a decrease in the prior year, with the cash flows from investing activities relating to the maintenance of the aircraft in rotables and other spare components. If we look at a sustainable earning point to really compare the performance, if we take the profit before tax from the prior year amounting to 348 compared to the 51 we're reporting now, the impairment that we incurred on Congo Express as contained in the annual report is a $35 million. From this $35 million, $6 million relates to the prior year, which is the $6 million deduction in the prior year column. The reclassification adjustment on the rotable spares is a once-off fair value adjustment and is not a sustainable earnings, and therefore it's deducted from the sustainable earnings slide. Fair value adjustments are added back as these relate to exchange differences and is not budgeted for from an operating point. In the prior financial year, we had a change in an estimate for UTL, which is the 39 and the 11 as reported before. The prior period under accruals of $14 million and $7.3 million on the prepayments. This then brings you to a total before tax of $109 million for this financial year compared to $108 from a sustainable earnings point in the prior year. This is a 1.4% increase from the prior year. If we just quickly give a synopsis of the industry, which is not really comparable because those are low-cost carriers and different main haul carriers to SA Express. But the biggest issue that we need to highlight is that despite the revenue growth of 19% of Comair, they still reported a net profit of 2.1, a net profit margin of 2.1%, whilst SA Express, with a 4% revenue growth, reported a net profit margin of 3%. I'll hand over to Matoto to just go through the bearings.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, Deputy Minister, and all protocol observed. I will then just go through the next slide, talks through all our challenges that we have experienced at SA Express, starting with the prior errors that were reported in our financial statement of $43.3 million, which related to the 2009 financial year. These errors, the first of this error related to the Transnet. At the time of the Transnet unbundling, there was a dispute in terms of the interest that was payable on the Transnet overdraft. A provision of $22 million was then raised and incorrectly allocated to sundry debtors instead of the Transnet overdraft. On settlement, it was agreed that $35 million was the settlement amount, and therefore the $35 million was reversed out of a Transnet overdraft, resulting in a $22 million now still remaining in sundry debtors, which is what we have corrected in the current in the 2009 financial statements. We also had a relation to 2008 financial year, there was an entry that was, there were journals that were passed through in a subsystem into what we call Bureau 13 that didn't roll over post the year end. Therefore, those errors were not carried forward into our opening balance in 2010. These errors were then corrected in the, also in the current financial year, in the 2009 financial. We also had a dispute with which relates to our unutilized tickets with SAA, and a provisional settlement was then raised. However, upon settlement, the entire amount was incorrectly reversed out of sundry income. What we have done now is to correct that error in 2009. The total errors for the 2009 financial statement, therefore, affecting our opening retained income in 2010 was 43.83 million. The next slide just shows the impact of these prior year errors on our reported earnings. If you look at our net profit as after tax, as previously reported, of 235.4 million, the total errors were then adjusted out of that 239, resulting in an adjusted net profit after tax of 192 million. We added back the bonus to come back to the net the budget to the net figure of 227, the adjusted figure of 227.2. So in terms of what the effect is on our statement of equity change, that we previously reported accumulated profits of 84.6 into 209, then adjusting that 43 million out resulted in an accumulated restatement of 209 of 41.2. The financial position was then impacted by the 34 million adjustment, which is the trade receivables and trade payables we adjusted by 25, leading to the reported balance now of 66 million. I then wanted to just share with you, which is not in the slide here, what our report, our audited report was. We received a qualified audit opinion. The basis of the qualification was that the auditors were unable to obtain sufficient appropriate evidence in terms of the valuation of our share of investment in of our share of unrecognized losses in Congo Express. We also had other, in terms of predetermined objectives, they reported a finding in terms of our compliance to laws in that we didn't at the time have a final approval on our exit out of Congo Express. There were also internal control challenges in that we experienced vacuum in the leadership of the finance function. Our CFO resigned, our CFO at that time resigned and the position was vacant, resulting in some financial and performance issues as well. Members, you are aware we have received, we were reported in the business day yesterday in terms of irregularities as it expressed. The next slide, I wanted to just share with you the challenges that relate to those reported challenges post our financial statements were finalized. We received a fraud hotline. Through our fraud hotline, we received an allegation relating to our reported results. The allegation related to three matters, two of which affect the financial position or financial performance as reported. The first related to a 42 million, which was reported included in our trade receivables as a VAT receivable, which we may not be recoverable from the revenue services. We are still busy with the investigation, and we have currently received the draft report, and we, in terms of that, the indication is that about 32 of that 42 million may have to be adjusted in that it was incorrectly reported. In addition, we had a 16 million, which is also included in our in our trade receivables, which related to our
and our which relates sorry, which related to a query which we have with us, the company SAA. They manage our passenger collections. In terms of that, there is an amount that we query that we and it has been ongoing for years. But as at year end, we felt that that amount was still recoverable. But the indications are that amount may not be recoverable. We are busy calculating the extent of that amount. Our records indicate that it's 16 million. SAA is disputing that, so we are looking at the calculations and we will revert. I mean, we will quantify that and follow that up. Prudent accounting would have been that we write that off, because at this time we didn't agree on the amount in question, and it has been long outstanding. Well, that is the extent of the two that will potentially impact our financial statements as reported, which may be reported as a prior adjustment in the next year that we are still discussing with our auditors. We further received an allegation which related to our procurement processes relating to IT software that was procured, and we are still investigating the report. The board hasn't said to determine to receive the draft report, so I am I'm going to say that the outcome at this stage are still sub judice. These allegations are material, and if substantial, they will affect the reported results in this year or even in the prior year. These findings will then be reported to the board. And the board, in conjunction with our auditors, we will determine whether there is a need for us to do the adjustment and the quantum of that adjustment. And I want to assure members that we will keep you informed in terms of this, the outcome of this forensic investigation, and we are resolute in ensuring that we expediently resolve this matter and take proper corrective action. Thank you.
I'll continue with maybe we've been talking about Congo Express and not basically explaining what happened there. We had a bit of an excitement there when we started. It was a great venture, but soon after we started, the market conditions were not as we had predicted. We had challenges with our partner, as reported by Matsotso, issues of corporate governance, actually issues of maintaining proper documents, etc., led to us having a qualified financial audit. It's bulk of it is price because of what happened in the DRC. The laws kept on shifting away from us, the legislation, a few more challenges as you get involved with it. The Gerard, which is the CEO at control, it's very difficult when you start a partnership to actually give away your control to the other side. But because of the circumstances in that country, we had those challenges. So we closed down the operation. We closed it down around May of this year, on July. But the board had approved closure way early, around November, September. But it took a long time to just get around it, because it's not an easy process in the DRC. There are lessons learned, and I'll share those. I won't go through all of them. Some of the lessons learned in the Congo, and what we would do when we go back into the continent, is we'll work with key stakeholders and solicit the support. We won't do it alone. It's lonely out there. We'll take the learnings and make sure that we follow proper corporate governance, whatever region we go into, and we'll apply our rules instead of trying to stay with their rules. As South Africa will look to hunt in a pack with other interested parties, the SOEs, we won't, again, as I said, we won't go alone. And, of course, we'll work closely with our legal and tax advisors so that, things don't change on us as we go further down. Because the issues of, for example, the Congo tax laws still date back to another century.
and it makes it a little bit difficult to apply the English laws. We'll also not do it again against, I mean, if we talked about the 35 million rand loss that we've had to take, and we took that on the nose. We took it on our income statement. The idea is, you know, garner enough support from developmental finance institutions like the DPSA and the IDC and any other partner who can work with us when we're building back, you know, the plan. We'll, you know, things like infrastructure, it must be there. You know, there's a saying that we must follow money and not try to, you know, bring money to us. I think there we try to create something instead of following who was there, banks, etc., and all those other players. And we must have the skills. We were trying to use the same management that was managing SA Express to try and run another airline in another country. And that also, you know, challenged us on both sides. So we closed it, and we moved out of that. We continue, though, to fly between Johannesburg and Lubumbashi. What we closed was the domestic operation in the Congo. Some of the issues that we're finalizing, we applied for PFMA, and it was approved, and we transferred our shares to our partner, Biz Africa. We terminated all the other agreements that had been in place with either the company Biz Africa or with any of the legislations there, including bank accounts, etc. We are still owed money, even though we have, again, prudently written off the 35 million from our financials for this year. It doesn't mean that from a commercial standpoint we're not going to try and recover commercially our losses against our partner, because that's the entire cost of the operation, so we carried it. But where the partner was a 51% shareholder and we're 49%. So now it's a matter of following the commercial process to recover our money. That's basically it on Congo Express. Just going forward, and I'll try and be quick, the new growth path, we are trying to redress the gender equity in scarce and critical areas. We have, I mean, recently taken almost a 100% female intake on our cadet pilot. I think we took 6, of which 5 were females, and they're doing very well. They're at 43 school right now as we speak, and operating very successfully there. We are also, in terms of the management development program, we're sort of biasing it towards females and blackers and the inclusive black. In terms of even experiential learning, we are trying to increase that, because we believe, again, to basically support the new growth path, we have to do things. We have to create skills, but we also have to create a few employment that could lead to permanent employment, either in SA Express or with other organizations. What is the plan? The roadmap is that we'll continue to we'll take this year 16 pilots. It's very expensive to train a pilot. It could cost us close to 650 to a million rand, because we take them from scratch. We're taking, you know, students that have just graduated from high school, 20-year-olds, and we take them for a 3 or 4 year program. We have a stretch that the minister has challenged us to come up with further intakes that we can put in place. Now, if we look at all the stretches, either a pilot, a technical apprentice, other development program, and experiential learners, we would need the support of about an additional 36 million to meet the 16, the 20, the 25, and the 11 individuals that we can train. However, internally, we're taking 16 there and technical 30. We're looking for female technical apprentices. I can tell you we haven't been very successful the way we wanted to. We haven't met the numbers that we wanted to, but we're working hard to try and increase women. And also people from outside of Gauteng, because we tend to focus on Gauteng. So we're looking for people from all provinces, the rural areas, in order to, I guess, spread the skills. You'll see that what we plan to train in the future is about 60% female and 40% male. So there's a huge focus on females rather than males. Some other areas we are creating, where we are affecting the national growth, the new growth path, is a black accounting firm. We've reappointed them. We are also trying to create an in-house internal audit function, which would probably, again, be biased towards females. And, of course, because of the increase of the fleet and the new fleet that we've acquired, we tend to pick up that even the stations that we fly to, they have to resource better so that they can be able to handle us. In terms of provinces, we spoke about the 8 provinces that we work with. You'll see that our capacity has grown on all provinces, which means that it gives opportunity for those provinces to indirectly increase their capacity to meet our operations. In terms of Africa expansion, we're working closer with our sister company, South African Airways, to identify markets within Africa. We still are going to continue to operate as a feeder airline, a regional airline, but as I say, is a network airline that flies trunk routes to develop the continent. And that's basically the gist. We still are looking at the countries that we've been looking at, West Africa and Ghana being the country, but again, we're doing that with SISPAC-SAA. In terms of the future, if you look at 2012, this is the year that we're in now, and so we'll finish with last year. IATA predicts a negative growth of minus 7% this year, and weaker economies across the board. Africa has seen it will lose about $100 million this year. But it's actually interesting. What we've seen year to date is a bit of growth. If we compare this year versus last year, we've seen an increase or growth year on year of about 14%, which means that we are growing steadily year on year, which is good. We've seen that not only on passengers but also on revenue, meaning that the revenue is matching growth. We are still having problems with some of the increases that we've seen in the market. So fuel, the charges, the passenger service charges, and all the other charges continue to increase, and that's eating our profitability, even though we're still getting the passengers.
Mr. Nchanga, can I ask you to speed up?
Two slides, I think. Challenges, pressure on profitability, we spoke about it. Some of the legislated increases, the AXAs and ATNS, etc., they've taken percentage, ATNS is the only one, the other two took increases of over 50%. Of course, the domestic market is the increased competition, reliability issues, we are improving on on-time performance. Of course, people and some of the delays we've experienced in fleet renewal. Strategic goals for next year, these are contained in the shareholders compact, and which I assume you probably have a copy of. Improve customer service, network growth, increase Africa, sustainable cargo, increase the productivity, some new growth path targets, and the BBBE transformation. I'll jump this slide. In terms of aircraft, we are looking to move from the 50-seater aircraft to the Q400s. We've received the 7 aircraft that we were buying. One of them will be arriving today, meaning all 7 will be in the fleet, and then we'll exit the 50-seater aircraft, which is why it looks like we're selling aircraft, like when we're acquiring a newer, more reliable, bigger aircraft. In terms of BBBE, we are looking to be a level 5 this year, a level 5 contributor this year. We're just waiting for our finalization of our certification, and then we'll be there. And then the other two areas that we'll be focusing on is still transformation and localization. We try as much as we can. With the fleet acquisition, we also have to follow the NIPP process, which means that there'll be some more opportunities to do things within the country. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your presentation. Members, do you have it? To the point, precise. Just Before I ask members to indicate, just to the secretary of the committee, when you want to ask a question, so that you can just make a list for us of questions to be asked. Can I, on behalf of the committee, congratulate you on your contribution to make the World Cup, FIFA World Cup, a success? I think you can be very proud of that achievement of transporting many of the teams. So on our behalf, on the members' behalf, congratulations on what you did last year. But you have also tremendous challenges since we last saw you. If I listened correctly, one of them of your KPIs, 9 have not been met, and you met 6. Ordering that in normal terms, that's not a good record. Your profit is substantially down from 250 million to 51 million, despite the FIFA World Cup that was presented in this country during this period. And then for the first time, I think since 2007, you correct me if I'm wrong, you received a qualified opinion from the independent auditors. And it's quite serious. It doesn't look serious, but it is serious, because if you look at the auditor's report, it says it's about compliance with laws and regulations. And I'm very glad that it's probably related why we're going to give the chance to the DP as well, because it's probably related to that, the Congo Express Airways situation, but also on your internal control and leadership. And then thank you for bringing to our attention the potential irregularities that was now post the event. And I'm sure members are going to ask questions about that. Members, it's open for questions. I have the list here. Mr. Mokwena, Mr. Gololo, Honorable Van Dalen, Honorable September, Honorable Sontu, Honorable Van Dijk, Honorable Borman, and then I'll ask a question in that order.
Mr. Nana,
and then the last one.
McQueen. Thank you, Chairperson. We welcome the report. And I think you've covered, Chairperson, as in respect of a number of introductory remarks. One would like to say, even if the report is not so good in terms of what we thought it was going to be, but one appreciates the transparency and the honesty which has been expressed here. It does show that with more accountability, it's expressed will achieve more, because we as parliamentarians deployed in this sphere of government can only assist, because we don't have forensic training. We can only assist and guide you, any state-owned company, if the management is honest and transparent. And progressively, you are becoming very transparent. And I think there'll be very, very few surprises that will come after this report here. One just wonders why this transparency is taking so long, because perhaps if you had been transparent with earlier, and not become shy, there could have been some intervention earlier. But we appreciate your transparency and the current leadership. That's point one. Point two is that you are actually the seedbed. You are the alma mater of the now successful CEO of SAA, because she comes from you. You mentored and nurtured her, and of course, with her own natural talent, she has distinguished herself as a very capable leader in the aviation industry. So you can be proud of that. Not everything is doom and gloom. Those two remarks. I've got a few questions, first, but I don't hold the stage. I want to find out from the CEO the DRC debacle. Nobody can blame you for that, because you obviously went there. You went there entrepreneurially because you saw a niche market, but of course the wheels came off on the other side. We can't blame you for that. Now, you say you're following a commercial route to try and recover some of the money. Can you just indicate to us, not that we're naive, we think it'll be easy, but what instrumentality are you going to use to get that money? Because, you know, that's a sovereign country, and then if things have gone haywire there, inside it, we're also a sovereign state, and you went there on your own bullishly. What are you relying on? What instrument are you relying on to get that money? Which of clearly said is not quantifiable at this stage. So the first one. The second one is, have you got any issues here with the civil aviation authorities? You are a good flyer. We haven't had too many accidents. But have you got any issues with the CAA? And finally, Chairperson, the Durban-Cape Town access, aviation access, which you are sharing with Mango, are there no synergies that you can develop in order not to experience mutual hemorrhaging?
Thank you, Honorable Mokwena. Members, can I ask, we have 9 questions. We have less than an hour time. Be precise, go to the point, and put your questions. I still want to give a second round, if it's okay with you. Mr. Khololo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me thank the presenter of SATS for the very informative presentation. I've got 2 questions and some comments. Let me start with the comments here on the DRC operations. You just answered that one as a comment, actually. These are not questions. I'll be interested maybe for the CEO to mention as to how much did they lose on the Congo Express thing operations that they have discontinued in random sense terms. And then on the employees, actually, I wanted to also to check the number of foreign employees employed by SAGS in the region. And then on skills development, I see an omission of the physically challenged people there. I don't see anything on that one. I'd like a comment on that one as well. Then coming to my questions, actually, the 2 questions that I mentioned, I'd be interested in knowing about the where is this question? How many jobs has SA Express created in the 6-month period in line with the new growth path objectives? That's the first one. The second one, it's on the what is the airline's performance on recruiting people with disabilities? That is the second, the last one. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Van Dalen.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to know, we heard from SAA also that they have problems at Oliver Tambo, and I hear another one, the baggage bill, which is the one, and then the severe petrol shortage that is at the moment at Oliver Tambo. How is this affecting your business and ultimately the bottom line? It seems like AXA at Oliver Tambo is not doing what they are mandated to do, and that is to look after passenger and baggage safety and the surety of fuel supply for the aeroplanes. I mean, these are 2 basic things that they should do, and they do not seem to get that right. What is the problem? Is it a management problem, or is it, can you tell us that? And then I see on slide number 5, you note that political interference or factors are one of the causes of your bottom line going down. Can you explain to us what they are, please? And then these on page 42 of the presentation, you talk about these potentially regular reported expenditures or incidences. How does that affect your bottom line? Does that mean that you could actually be in a loss this year, that you're actually in a deficit instead of making a profit, if those are all calculated and they don't realize you don't get the money back? Does that mean that? That is all I want to ask. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable September.
Okay, thank you. I want to ask PFMA related questions. I note that they're talking about an investigation now. Can you be a bit more specific? When did the investigation start? And maybe more, why now? Because when books are being ordered, they don't start now. It's quite a while ago. And surely during that period, there should have been and there could have been alarm bells being given. We don't hear where is the investigation going to, whether anyone has been suspended, all of the usual PFMA requirements when matters like this occur. I want to ask, do you have any internal controls? Again, the PFMA requires there to be an audit committee and a number of other committees. Is that in place? If it's not in place, what is the difficulty of having that in place? And if it is in place, what did they say? What are the reports that they have brought forward? And what are their regular feedback that they are giving on the financial situation of yourselves? Chair, I would imagine that notwithstanding our conversation with Scopa on this matter, that we should have a conversation with Scopa on this thing, but more than that, we should, as a matter of urgency, place them on the same list that we did of some of the entities, and that is they must come and give us a quarterly report on their financial situation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Sontu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. I can't emphasize more on unrecognized losses that you have made. And one would want to understand, how are you going to how are you going to keep that from occurring? The reoccurrence of that, how are you going to curb it? Because it's a worrying factor, given the fact that you have made less profit this financial year. The second one, Chairperson, on your challenges, you find it very difficult to attract scarce skills, and you mentioned the fact that you can't even retain them. What is happening? Are you losing people? Are you being poached on? Or what is happening? How do you lose these scarce skills that you need? Also there, the last one, Chairperson, you have increased passenger claims as one of your challenges. I don't know, I think when we were coming from our last trip, two of our members lost their baggages. We were coming from Caracas to Buenos Aires, I think. One baggage was found in Santiago. The other one was found, I think it was Libya, in Brazil, I think, yeah. But it practically showed us that there's a coding system that airlines are using, which would make it very, very difficult for people to lose their baggages and all that. And you aren't you having that as an airline? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Bowman.
Thank you. It's been
been a very difficult presentation for you, and I think we acknowledge that. I want to also just pick up on, I think of great concern is the Congo Express deal, because that combined with the two aircraft that that suffered and also contributed to the loss in the profits, or the declining profits, has been has dragged your the whole tone of your report down, especially after the last couple of years we've had such good reports from you that it is disappointing. I want to just ask, I don't want to repeat the questions that have been asked, but in going into this venture, the Congo Express, and going into the DRC, initially, and it's reported in your annual report, you thought that this was going to be viable. Now, I would imagine that before you go into something like this, a big venture like this, there's a lot of homework that gets done. And I think my question is, was that done? How were you hoping it was going to be viable? Was the actual work done on the ground to know that that would happen? And then I think also of concern are these irregularities in the accounting practices. And I think I also, you know, your chairperson has reported that 3 to 4 years, I think, it's been a number of years that this has been coming. And I think the concern is, as the Honourable September has already raised, how do we go through auditors' reports and coming here before the committee and, you know, and all of a sudden we now have this. So I think I won't repeat the question, but it is of concern. The other thing, if I may just add, is your employment equity. Whilst the figures don't look too bad on their own, when you compare them, what is happening is that you are actually going backward in your employment equity, and I think that's a concern. So if we could have some comment on how you are proposing to see to that. And I think the KPIs are not a pretty picture. I know it's all affected by the profits, but it certainly is not a pretty picture. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Nana.
Well, thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, a few years back, I guess, 2009, if not last year, I had asked a question both to SAA and also South African Express Airways, and I would want to repeat that. It has come to my attention that one of the criteria used in recruiting staff at both airlines is that a person should be capable of swimming, should be able to swim. I know not at the level of Penny Haynes and myself, but my question is, Chairperson, is it still the same? Because the last time we spoke about this in the committee, we generally felt that it was kind of discriminatory against prospect some other young people who would want to be employed because of their background. Not all of them have swimming pools. At least I know Bayanda doesn't have a swimming pool where he comes from. The second one, Chairperson. I wouldn't really want to overemphasize the concern raised by committee members about the 70% decline in profits in this year. My question would be, you know, Chair, before I get to my question, you know, in most cases, people get performance bonus for the sake of getting performance bonus. And my own explanation of performance bonus, I may be wrong, is that you can only get a performance bonus when you have gone beyond expectations. You are getting paid to do your day-to-day job in any case. You can only get a performance bonus when you have outperformed yourself. Now, seeing that there is a 70% decrease in revenue at SA Express, is the CEO and his executives really expect to be paid performance bonuses? Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Just before I hand over to SA Express to answer the questions, on page note 6 of your financial statements on page 74.
Mr. van Dijk was also on the list, but you skipped him. He feels let out.
You should not be marginalized. Sorry.
Honourable van Dijk. When you read out the names.
Honourable van Dijk. I should have given you before Ms. Bormann. My apology. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. And also thank for Honourable van Dalen coming to my rescue. I trained him very well. Chairperson, I want to quote from the annual report, the Auditor General, and I quote here from page 55, we have been unable to obtain sufficient and appropriate audit evidence as to the valuation of the company's share of unrecognized losses. And I just want to know from SA Express, what are you going to do to prevent such a comment in the future in your annual report? Secondly, Chairperson, it's been said in the beginning by the presenter that for SA Express, the clients are of most importance. I differ. I should think that the interest of the shareholder, your shareholder, should be of the most importance. Taking into account what the chairperson also said about the decline of your profits the past financial year. But going back to your point of view that the clients are the most important, I think they are important, but not most important. I just want to ask a question that if a air ticket has been issued by South African Airways, and all of a sudden then you land on a South African Express aircraft, which happens, and you experience problems during that flight, and you have to come back from the point of departure. For instance, you fly from point A to B, but you can't land in point B, you have to come back to point A. Once the passengers leave the aircraft, who is responsible then for accommodation and for caretaking of those passengers? Would it be SAA who issued the ticket, or will it be South African Express who will take the responsibility? Because there are some examples, where SAA issued tickets, and not necessarily with your aircraft, but with other aircrafts, that circumstances like this happen, and none of the two entities that took the responsibility. The one blamed the other, and the passengers were stuck on the airport. So if you can just say that we have clarity, if something like that occurs, who will be responsible then for those passengers? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable van Dijk, and again, my apologies for leaving you out. I think the two most important outstanding issues in this report is, one, your qualified opinion, and secondly, what you reported this morning, potential irregularities reported post the annual financial statements. On your note 6 of your financial statements of page 74, your unrecognized share of losses in Congo Express, there you say that it says the Express share of unrecognized losses amount to 19 million. 19 million rand. So my question will be, in the audit, independent auditor's last paragraph, he says, SA Express is still awaiting final approval for the disposal of the shares. Can you update us on that one? Because that's the bottom line. That's why you got a qualified audit opinion. You didn't get a final approval. Please inform the committee whether you've received this final approval, and if not, why not? Secondly, in the director's report on page 59, you talk about a possible or a considering of legal proceedings to recover this debt. I'm talking the Congo unrecognized debt. Have you considered, since this report, to proceed with legal proceedings or not to recover the debt? And then on page 49, I'm not talking about your remuneration of your directors, but on page 49, there's a table about retainer fees. And that retainer fees is, you just need to explain to the committee this one. It's not the salary, it's not the post-retirement, it's not other contribution. It's retainer fees for attending or serving as directors and attending board meetings, I would assume, and subcommittees. But it's a huge variance between ranging from 47,000 per quarter to 167,000. And it seems to me it's per quarter, if I read it correctly. Can you just explain the table to the committee? And lastly, your potential irregularities reported now today to the committee. I think we need to congratulate you that you immediately are taking steps and doing a forensic audit and investigate. And you also confirm that you will keep this committee informed. Can you just give us a time frame? What time frame do you put to this? So that we can be informed as a oversight committee, functional oversight committee, and that we can be on a need-to-know basis. Well, in strictly speaking, on a must-to-know basis. Inform this committee about progress so that we can also arrange it according to into our program. It's over to you to answer the question.
Mr. Chairman, if I might tackle some of the questions, but perhaps many of the questions relate to the subject of the post-AGM irregularities, and if I can respond to that one generically, then I can ask Matsotso to pick up the specific details. The reason that we were asked the question, when was the investigation started? The investigation was started after, it was about mid-September, Matsotso, when the forensic auditors were instructed to begin the investigation, about mid-September. Why only now? Because it was only brought to our attention then. Why did we not discover this before? One of the other members asked, we've been through years and years of audit reports, very nice audit reports, very clean audit reports, why now? Because a whistleblower told the hotline. Otherwise, we would still not know, and we would go into yet another financial year end with a clean audit report. I would also like to mention that our internal audit function is also outsourced to professional external auditors. The report we got for the AGM this year indicated that there were no irregularities in the controls. The controls were good. We received that report in July 2011. The whistleblower acted in August, and we implemented the forensic audit from mid-September. I really, really must reiterate to the members of the committee, we will find out, we will go to the ends, no matter how long it takes, to ensure that we know exactly what took place, what the quantum is, who was responsible, take action if required, and put in place the real controls that will make sure that this can never recur, I beg your pardon. That probably answers quite a few of the questions from a philosophical viewpoint. From the board's viewpoint, we will not stop until this is finished. In terms of timing, the final report we are expecting, Matsotso?
Yes, currently
it's about 3 weeks from now, I think.
Yes. We've got a draft report, and what we still need to do is just to the
the audit committee, because that's the committee that is instituted the investigation, need to still meet and consider the report and make final recommendations so that the report is finalized. That will take in the order of 3 weeks. That includes the board sitting and listening to the recommendations of the committee, audit committee.
Just before you go, I think this is very serious what you're saying here. I think it's totally unacceptable that we rely on whistleblowers to uncover irregularities. Your internal control processes and procedures and systems should pick it up. That is where the problem is. We cannot rely on whistleblowers to say this audit is not clean. There are mistakes, there are problems. I think this is a serious indictment on the internal control and policies and practices of SA Express. Sorry if I don't speak on behalf of the committee, but this is a way to go beyond the whistleblower. This is to the very essence of good and solid financial management, embodied in the PFMA, embodied in the legislation that this House passed. So really, I'm extremely disappointed that we came to this point, and I think you need to take serious recognition of the view of this committee about the what the auditor, and again go back, the audit report talks about not only the compliance with laws and regulations, it talks about internal control and leadership and financial and performance management. So just this remark, sorry to interrupt you, but I hand it back to you, so complete, and then we have a second round.
Mr. Chairman, you speak on behalf of the committee. You equally share the sentiments of the board. The board takes cognizance and applies its mind to the professional advice provided by external resources. This is a major concern to us and a huge disappointment, so we are at one on that. So I might ask Inati to pick up some of the very specific questions that have been asked. And if we can share the question and the answering part, we'll cover them all.
All right. I'll start with Honorable Mokwena's question around the DRC, and I also know that Honorable Sonto and Honorable Bowman asked a similar question, DRC. DRC, the instrument to recover is we will follow legal proceedings against the partner, and the partner happens to have what we did to protect ourselves is that we had a shareholders agreement which is governed under South Africa, and we'll follow certain rules. He does have a share in South Africa, so we'll follow some of these. We'll try and recover from South Africa, but we are also going to try and we are using lawyers from the DRC to try and recover, but we have to give it time. It's a process. We have to under some rules of financial, I don't want to say liquidation, we have to wait for a period before we can institute certain claims.
Chairperson, that your partner is sole proprietor, does not like an SOE like you are here.
It's a sole proprietor. Okay, that's the DRC question. Honorable Komomo asked about foreigners employed. We have two. Hululu. Okay, sorry. Asked about the foreigners employed. We've got two countries where we've employed people. We've employed about 24 foreigners in Botswana that operate from the airport. And we've employed about 10 or 9 employees in Namibia. Those are the main foreign employees that we have in our company. And they are living in the countries where they operate. I would say we don't have more than 10 foreigners operating in this other. Out of the other 1,050 people, we don't have more than 10 foreigners, if I can think of the numbers now, top of my head. Yes, we are still challenged in terms of our physically disabled employees. It's an area of focus that we have. Currently, we're working with those that have disclosed, because if you recall, there's many kinds of disabilities, and it all depends on disclosure by the individual. And, so we're low on those numbers. We are working on it, though. We're looking at areas where we can accommodate. You know, we're working with the likes of RSLs, of SACWA, to see if you know we can improve our numbers there. And then, in terms of the jobs in the last 6 months, we have, I think if we look now, we're sitting at about 1089, so we have increased about by 5% in the number of employees in the company, and the bulk of those would qualify under the NGP. Then if I go to Mr. Honorable Van Dalen's question, the baggage issue, yes, it's still a concern, even though the numbers are low compared to international benchmarks, but we still are, you know, it's a concern. One bag missing or pilfered is too many bags. So we are working closely there to make sure that we try and close that gap. We're working with AXA and our security and their security to really, really try and improve that. Actually, to combine that question with, I guess it was Mr. Honorable Santos' question around the coding system. We do use those. The challenge is that, you know, when a bag has stopped moving, elements of the underworld would remove those codes so that that bag goes missing forever. And they do. They do. You'll find the tags having been taken off, and then, you know, people have an opportunity. For us to recover that now, we need the passenger to complete a World Tracer form where they tell us what's inside their bag, and then we can go and trace it. And again, if the answers are correct, you know, if they can specify those items, it's quicker for us to recover it. But if some of those items, you know, are not really the, because sometimes you don't even know what you had in your bag. If it's the wrong items, we may misplace it for a while. But we try and reconcile bags with their owners. In terms of the CAA, let me also answer Honorable Nana's question around the swimming. And we don't have any issues with the CAA just on that question. We work very well with them, and we support their new management as they continue to improve the way they operate. They did take a 50% increase on their fees. We're not very happy on that side. But besides that, in terms of issues of regulation and all that, we work very well with, we don't have any problems with it. Then in terms of the swimming is regulatory. It's difficult to employ cabin crews. It's only cabin crews. Every other employee doesn't have to swim. It's only the 200 employees that we have as cabin crews. Unfortunately, it's regulation, it's ICAO standards, it's way above. You know, it's controlled out there. Yes, can we do something on our side from a training point of view? Probably something that we can look at, but we cannot make you. Remember, the cabin crews are not, they are actually safety officers before they are service people. Their responsibility is on those issues. In the unlikely case that we have to land in water, if a cabin crew cannot swim, it would be messy. So it's a safety issue.
Chairperson, we will forward this answer to Honorable Nana.
Oh.
You have the floor. You call that. That's the announcement.
Again, Honorable Van Dijk's question around who's responsible for passengers if we have a return to base or any of those things. The airline is responsible. Now, if you look at between us and SAA, there are certain services that we've outsourced to them, but ultimately we are responsible. So if a passenger, let's say, was moving from Bloemfontein going to Joburg, but they end up in Durban for whatever reason. Now, in Durban, we may not have employees, but we've got a service agreement with SAA, therefore they will help us there, but they will work through us. But if the aircraft was to go from Bloemfontein to Bloemfontein, all the employees that are in Bloemfontein work for SAA Express, so we will take care of those employees. That if there's also a difference, if the return, if the reason for the passengers to be at the airport is because of any incident outside of acts of God, then we are responsible. For example, if you find out that the weather is so bad at 6 a.m. in the morning and we cancel our flights due to weather, we may not be responsible. But if we've invited you and you come to the airport and then we decide the weather is not bad, then we are responsible. We'll be held liable. And we usually take care of our passengers. We've got contracts with hotels. We've got contracts with buses and companies, etc., to move the passengers to the and accommodate them. The other issues, I think, are outside of operations. There's still the two main issues. The Mr. Van Dalen's question around the political influence. It's definitely not South Africa. We work very well with our shareholder. It's when we are looking for new route rights in other countries, then there is sometimes interference there. The DRC is case in point, where we've been trying to increase the number of frequencies in that country for years now, and they've been kept at 7 plus a few supplementaries, and that's also other countries like Angola, Maputo, etc. But it's an aviation challenge that we have in the continent. Then this one is too operational, but I can try. In terms of page 49, the non-executive director's remuneration, I can try and respond to that, but I can even let Lillian answer it. But it's all about the different responsibilities of the different members of the board.
If I can just pick that one up. These are non-executive directors' fees listed here as per the SOE's remuneration guidelines of 2007, which you've seen each year. They're reflected here on a quarterly basis. If you just focus on the annual column, the differences are determined by how many of the board committees the individual directors serve on. And there are different levels of fees for the chair of a board committee, for a member of a board committee, and for a normal member of the board. Otherwise, they are as they have been in the previous year and as per the DPE guidelines.
Maybe another question from Honorable September. When and why? Internal control is an area that we are focusing on. I mean, we're focusing on it internally. And every time we find a gap, we try to close it. We're using National Treasury regulation. We're using all regulations, PFMA, and to improve basically internal controls. And, of course, we've got all the necessary committees, be it the risk committee internally. We have the audit and risk committee. We've got the SHE committee. We really created enough structures internally to control these different facets of trying to run the organization. And if there's intention, then we will manage that and catch it as it's happening, which is some of these issues.
Can I just also pick up on the PFMA related query and the qualified opinion, and just clarify on the qualified audit opinion. SAA Express use what we call a combined assurance model. Our internal audit is outsourced to KPMG. They review, their plan is approved by the audit committee. We meet quarterly, we review their performance, and external audit also, we have other assurance providers that also we rely on. I think what I need to just clarify is that the qualification that we received is not related to any internal control weaknesses, but
specifically it's relating to the fact that the auditors couldn't confirm the quantum of unrecognized losses that we have experienced in Cox in Congo Express. In terms of internal control, they didn't highlight any weaknesses in our internal control environment. Our internal auditors, in the same token, did not report any weaknesses. I think what is coming out is that these errors may have happened intentionally, or they were not picked up, because the purpose of an audit is not to specifically look for errors, but to, on a test basis, ascertain if there are any problems. So when they do an audit, they will look at the reasonability. They've got their own materiality issues that they will look at. They will look at, and we interrogate their reports in the quarterly meetings that we sit. I personally have the meetings, my pre-meetings with the internal auditors and the external auditors, respectively, prior to each meeting to go through the issues of being reported, and the committee deliberate on these issues, and if there are any errors, any errors that were picked up during the audit, those were adjusted. But these were exceptional in circumstances, including the prior errors that were not picked up our internal controls, as already indicated. If there is intention, that is what the forensic investigation will tell us, and we will then take appropriate action to remedy that. I think our fourth hotline is also part of what we call our internal control, because we have put that in place to help us pick up any intentional or fraudulent activities that would have gone through without being picked up by normal processes.
Just to maybe come up, answer some more questions if we haven't left anyone. The Honorable Nana talked about performance bonuses. We have not paid the performance bonuses for financial year 2011 because we didn't meet the targets. And if we don't meet the KPIs, we don't pay bonuses. That's it. Simple and straightforward. The only bonus you might see there is a small, it's what we call long-term incentive, which comes from previous years, 3 years ago. So that's it. But the performance bonus for 2011 was not paid to anybody in the organization. And then in terms of scarce skills, Honorable Sonto asked about those. There is, yes, the airline industry is very funny. It's a very small industry, and there is poaching between the airlines. We did lose a few of our employees, some to SAA. I think about five strong went to SAA, and we continue to develop, and there's nothing wrong with people going to our sister company, SAA, because they are our sister company. So we support that, and we'll continue to work closer with them too. But, of course, it will show like as if it's affected us, and we'll continue to develop our people. We do understand that, remember, most people, together with the cadet program, some of our cadets, for example, we work closer with SAE. Some stay with us, some belong to SAE, so we count them as our numbers, and then they move on to the other side. It's in the nature, but we have developed programs to maintain our people. Some of it is what we're discussing now. We've got, we think we pay good salaries. We've got a good skill development program, people management program. We've got other forms of remuneration, be it a short-term incentive, a long-term incentive, and we have succession planning, etc. So we think we're running a good show when it comes to managing the people. Of course, you will lose some because also they are highly valued. It's a good training ground, the smaller airlines, because you get to become highly entrepreneurial and you get to do more than what you would do in other industries. So our people get valued a lot. I'm not advertising them to lose them, but they tend to be very good. Cape Town, Durban, we are working closely with our sister company, again, SAA. on that route, because there is a code sharing of some sort or code use. It is a very tricky market. It is difficult. We've lost a lot of the business passengers because we don't have, as the group, we don't have the business class product there, and it's making it a little bit difficult. We've seen a lot of senior executives who are moving away from the state-owned airlines to go and fly the people with the business class product. It's not really nice for us, but we have lost those, and we continue to market the market to get more passengers to fly with us. I think we've covered in terms of the fuel shortage, maybe just the last one. The fuel shortage, when we get told that there's fuel shortage, we've got contingency plans, as is expressed, and some of them include what we call tankering. Tankering is where we would go to other airports and fill up more than we need, so that when we come to Joburg, we don't have that much requirement for fuel. That way we can assist the Joburg shortages now until they get back to the normal fuel supplies. The challenge, what we've been told, is that the challenges are from Durban. It's the movement of fuel from the coast to Johannesburg. That's where the problems have been. And we continue to monitor that. We haven't suffered any shortages. Even with the strike that they had, the fueler strike, we never stopped a single flight because we're short of fuel. So we're still okay.
There was also a question relating to the PFMA approval on the exit of Congo. We have since received that. That is one of the findings in terms of predetermined objectives that the Auditor General picked up. There was also a question relating to whether there was any due diligence when we went into the Congo transaction, when we did the Congo transaction. I want to assure members that full due diligence was conducted by an independent consultant for the company, and the findings of that were also addressed, but none of these issues that we discovered subsequent were evident at the time of the due diligence. Just to make a comment, the partner that we have chosen is actually a current supplier to the company. He is doing some of our ground handling work in Lubumbashi. So that is the extent of how we had a relationship with the partner, and we thought we had known the partner. But obviously when things happen, these are some of the lessons that we pick up, and we will build on this. Thank you very much.
You also asked the answer, I didn't pick it up, the final approval for the disposal of the shares. You've answered that.
Yes, we've received it.
Thank you. Can I, members, the time has run out. Do you want urgent second question to be asked before I'm going to give the DPE a chance to make a final closing statement? Who wants to ask a question? Honorable September, Honorable Borman, and Honorable Khololo, in that order. Very briefly, our time is up.
Yeah, sure. Chair, thank you very much. Let me just say the following. I mean, I really respect the answers that were given, but unfortunately, those answers really hasn't helped quite a lot. This is one of the reasons why this committee must look at why we should change the Public Audit Act. Public Audit Act says that doesn't compel them to audit entities. It's not the first entity that tell us all sorts of stories about their finances. So that's the first one that I want to say, that we must get the Public Audit Act to be compelled to look at entities. The second one that I don't know. I am not hearing what the board says in terms of their fiduciary responsibility. If you look at section 50 of the Public Finance Management Act, and I won't read through it, then I think both DPE and the board has got a bit to answer in terms of what that section of the Act is saying. Because when you come to Parliament, you then bring all the relevant information to this structure to say what needs to happen. The answer is that in September, you said you started to do whatever. It is now November. Surely you could have brought an addendum here to Parliament to say, having commissioned an investigation, these are the preliminary findings, except they might not all be, you know, completed. But at least something that says to the structure the seriousness with which we see this, that these are the kind of things that you, because it's incumbent upon you, not because we ask it, but because the Public Finance Management Act says that the accounting officer has a number of responsibilities with regards to everything else that you have reported to us. So we don't see that. So we're looking forward to see how DPE is also going to tell us about their oversight in this regard, ensuring that the prescripts of the Public Finance Management Act has been followed to deal with this business. Chair, I am convinced now more than anything else that we need to take a number of steps ourselves and not wait, because I think quite a number of very serious things were reported here. We're not hearing whether they say that they're going to continue with KPMG. We're not hearing them saying, I mean, I heard everything of the internal audit. Quite frankly, it's not a sufficient answer that has been given to us. Is anyone of the internal audit people here? It would have been good if they could report to us alongside this report. So I'm saying, Chair, I don't think we should allow the situation to happen again. As we went through the report ourselves, we should ask both from the department and from the entity to, when they come and report, that there are certain people that should accompany them when they come here. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Orman.
Yes, I'll be very brief. I actually am following on from this to say that it's very hard for us to understand how you can say that you've got everything in place and yet you can't pick up on a thing like this after a number of years. So my question is, and I think it will be revealed in the report, you talk about 3 weeks before it goes to the board, if I'm understanding you correctly, and the question is approximately when will we have that report before us? Thank you.
Honorable,
thank you very much. It's a quick one also from me. It's in terms of the business class, because I heard the CEO saying that they don't have that product within the industry. And it's going to be a funny question, of course, from a layman's what to call, in that what is difficult, I mean, to introduce a business class in an aeroplane whereby you just put the curtain there and then separate those. Yeah, I just wanted to check this. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable CEO and Chair, I'm going to give you a chance now to final respond, and then I'm going to ask DPE for their final comments. Over to you.
I'll answer the question about business class first. Yes, there is possibilities. We know that in Europe, for example, they would do that where they just put a curtain. But the actual changing of the chair and making it slightly bigger, that's where it gets a little bit complex, including with the mask, where they are located, etc. So it's a big job to do it. Then the other questions that I guess the other questions were more had to do with the potential irregularity, and I'll leave them over to you.
Let me try and answer that. I thought we had made it quite plain the seriousness with which the board regards this. It would have been premature to have brought anything to this meeting today. We have had interim reports from the forensic auditors. Those interim reports, for us as a board, create more questions than answers. the forensic auditors have been sent back to do more digging and more delving. And only when we are satisfied can we then determine what is the extent of the damage to the organization, what are the implications, what action must be taken, and when the board deliberates on that, we will communicate first to the shareholder. The shareholder has been appraised of the process to date, and the shareholder will be advised first. In terms of giving you an estimated date, I am optimistic that we may be able to communicate back to this committee by the end of November.
Done? Thank you. You've done. Can I ask DPE whether you want to make a final concluding remark or a comment on what you heard today? Deputy Minister?
Chair, it will be important for the DPE to speak to some of the issues that have been mentioned. I'll ask Raisibe to lead the rejoinder from the department. Thereafter, I'll make concluding remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister, and thank you, Chair. Just a few remarks, and perhaps to start off, to indicate that the department is aware of the forensic investigation. We also eagerly await the outcome of the report, and of course at that point we will be able to engage on the details of what's being reported by the board at that stage in terms of the findings of the forensic audit. So I think on that one I will leave it there, but we seriously are concerned as well as the committee is on the issues relating to the forensic audit. Just to reflect on the performance of the company, that indeed SA Express did not achieve most of its shareholder compact targets. And primarily, I mean, this has been well spotted that it's relating to the low profitability figure. Significantly low profitability figure. And we're very concerned as a department for an airline that will be embarking on a fleet renewal program. It is quite concerning that they will not be able to have the retained earnings to support them through the funding requirements for the fleet renewal program. So from a departmental perspective, we're really monitoring this. And in fact, as we have done with SAA, we're now instituting monthly meetings to monitor the performance of the company. I think it takes circumstances like this one to also reflect on ourselves as a department in terms of our own oversight processes and to what extent we can then look into the processes of the company itself, the committees, the mitigation strategies put together by the board to ensure that the kind of report that we see today does not come again before this portfolio committee. So we'll also be looking internally at the department at how we can also improve on our oversight processes to make sure that we improve on the current situation. I think that's there's quite a lot of bad news with this annual report, but there's also some good things to reflect on with SA Express. I think on a very positive note, the airline is at the forefront of skills development and transformation, perhaps not achieving the targets that we would like to see them achieve, but I think really we can commend them for trying to get especially the scarce skills of pilots in the aviation sector, black pilots specifically. We know that it's a very challenging area, and from our perspective, SA Express is commended on that line. And I just to conclude and say that there are plenty of opportunities for SA Express, just as there are many challenges that we have to address from the DP and the board. And I think part of it starts with strengthening
the management capability around financial management, reviewing the internal controls that are there. And I think let's not discount the fact that the whistleblower line, the hotline, is an internal control. And the fact that the board took seriously the call that was lodged, I think needs to be highlighted as a response, a quick response from the board. So the Africa expansion strategy, we will work with management to make sure that we promote the SA brand in the region. We'll make sure that we do a thorough risk assessment, not just of the market potential, but also how we're going to manage our own relationship. The choice of partner is important. Nothing on that note, Deputy Minister, thanks.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair. There are a number of pertinent issues that have been correctly raised by the Portfolio Committee. On a different occasion, perhaps after we have had all the annual reports by the various entities that fall under the remit of public enterprises, it will be necessary for us to engage with the Portfolio Committee to give an overall picture as to how we are taking forward the challenges within the department and also the successes. One of the issues that I would just like to speak to, which members have correctly flagged, the issue of internal and external controls. We have discussed this at length with all entities, namely to ensure that you don't have the same auditing companies, you don't have the same legal companies that have ongoing contracts for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. After that, there's a blurring of responsibilities. Then the audit, the oversight becomes blurred and not sharp. So the issues that you have raised are issues that are also close to our hearts, and there are issues that are currently being addressed with all the state-owned enterprises or state-owned companies that fall under the Department of Public Enterprises. The other issue that members also correctly flagged was the expansion of South African Express into Africa. The dimension that was missing there, perhaps with hindsight, was greater support from government. You'd find that most, if not all, countries in the world, where there are bilateral relations between countries, governments have a stake in ensuring that the best conditions prevail for their companies that do business in second or third countries. So that's also a dimension that we have spoken to in regard to South African Express as to how to create better synergies in future where government can play the enabling role and then allow the state-owned entity to engage in business. So there are a number of factors. A number of questions have been raised correctly by the Portfolio Committee. Some answers, tentative answers, have been given. But because of the nature of the engagement, time constraints, there are issues that we'd like to flag, share greater information, but the time constraints does not make this possible today. Thus, where I started earlier to say that on a different occasion, it will be necessary for the department to enable a report back to the Portfolio Committee, but also before that meeting to communicate with the Office of the Chairperson to find out from the Portfolio Committee what are the issues that you'd like to highlight so that when we come prepared for those issues for further discussion, but also issues of information that we'd like to share with the Portfolio Committee. Chairperson, I thank you.
Deputy Minister. On that note, I'm going to make a closing remark. We first want to thank SA Express, the chairperson, Ms. Boyle, the CEO, Mr. Nchanga, the acting CFO, and other members of your team. Thank you for your presentation. Up to now, this committee has experienced SA Express as a high-flying SOE. All you can go back in a number of years. We complimented you. Really, you came here with excellent reports, and now you're faced with a number of challenges, and we really wish you well. It's not we and you. We all together in this game. We want to assist you to reach the same heights that you had previously before this committee, and we're going to work with you to assist you in that matter. Sometimes we'll be blunt, brutal and straightforward, but this is how we built together a better SA Express. So thank you for that. But your good luck, and we wish you well in all the challenges that you are facing, and they are major, major challenges. And we will wait keenly your report on the outcome and the findings of the arranging audit. You're going to the shareholder, and we will engage with the shareholder and or with you as the oversight committee. I agree with the Deputy Minister, the new Companies Act and King 3, in fact, makes it compulsory to change your auditors after a number of years and not to have the same auditors over and over again. So it's again going back to compliance with laws and regulations. But there are major, major challenges, and we wish you well in your endeavor. Thank you for making time this morning. Thank you for DPE. Thank you, Deputy Minister, for coming along and giving us some highlights and updates. Also to DPE, the media, all the other people, and largely members of Parliament for really studying and asking the questions that really matters on this. This meeting, this session is now closed. We're going to ask for a body break for 5 minutes, and then SAFCOL will come in for the second annual report briefing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, it was the CBS.
Oh, you?
No, I think Thank you.
Members, can we start? Welcome to this second part of this. Eric, Mr. Sontu, can we start the meeting? Welcome to the second part of this portfolio committee meeting. First of all, I want to welcome the SAFCO, the chairperson, Ms. Mawenshu, and also the acting CEO, Ms. Manyama Matome, for your presence. You're going to make the presentation. Also welcome to the Deputy Minister of Public Enterprises, Mr. Ben Martens. You're welcome to the hearing, and members of the DPE, the ministerial staff, and members of the media, PMG, and also members of parliament. The procedure we're going to follow, I'm going to ask only the members to introduce themselves, for you just to introduce yourself formally, and then I'm going to hand over to you to make your presentation. Thereafter, members will ask questions, and you will again have the opportunity to reply to the questions, and then I will ask DPE to make a closing closing statements, and then we will close the meeting. You're most welcome. If I look back at my notes, you were here on 23 November 2010 when we listened to you, and a number of issues were discussed on that day. We were in the old part of the assembly wing in V119, and a number of key issues were discussed that day. And when I went through your report, I could see some of the issues are still there. So we're looking forward to discuss this and to ask questions and listen to your progress report, because this is a reporting to Parliament of what you did in the last financial year against your targets and what you did with your budget. So with that, members, I'm going to ask Honourable September to start introducing.
The chair said my name already. I'm Gloria Bowman, member of the committee.
Aubrey Mukwena, member of the committee, and next to me is Mr. Sondo, member of the committee.
Next to me is member of the committee.
Okay, that is what it called. Nice to meet Mr. Pandalin. Thank you, Chair. I can confirm this is Honourable Pandalin.
Then just formally, the chairperson of the committee, Mr. Peter Molaleka, tendered his apology, and he cannot attend the meeting. My name is Gerard Koornhof. I'm acting chair for the meeting. DPE.
My name is Igor Ben Martens, Member of Parliament first and foremost, Deputy Minister, Public Enterprises.
Sam from DPE.
My name is Pashan Mukombo, Acting Deputy Director General, responsible for SAFCO, DPE.
Zohali Masubonge, DP.
Post Guard Researcher for the Committee.
Bayendam Zoneli, DPE.
Yuli Soland from the Parliamentary Communication Services.
Thank you so much. Can I ask all members just to switch off your cell phones? Chairperson, Acting CEO, over to you.
Thank you. My name is Nomvaya Ramagwensho, the chairperson of SAFCON.
My name is Maureen Manyama Madume, the CFO for SAFCON and also the acting CEO.
Thank you, Chair. Last year in November when we met, we introduced ourselves and we said we're the incoming board. We've been now settled for almost a year. We started in November last year, so 1st of November today, we almost a year as a board of SAFCON. We have spent time building relationships with the department and all relevant stakeholders for SAFCON. We also embarked on a strategy formulation process. When we were here last year, we were asked a lot of questions around the financial performance of SAFCON, and we spent a lot of time formulating the strategy and also working on a turnaround program. We held our AGM on the 11th of August, which was attended by the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and the Department officials, and the feedback we received from the shareholding minister was very positive. We discussed a lot of strategic issues that the ministry is attending to, or the department is attending to, as far as support is concerned. You'll notice that Maureen introduced herself as the acting CEO. We separated with the CEO, Mr. Gopas Proyet, on the 30th of September. He is no longer the CEO of SAFCON. We have started the process now. We are about to consult with the Deputy Minister on the process that will follow in recruiting the new CEO of SAFCON. In terms of the strategy process, we have started the process and consultation has been completed with all the employees of SAFCON, the overall consultation process, but the process with the affected employees will be discussed individually with those employees at the right time. But that's to assure the committee that the process that we're following will not result in any retrenchments, especially at local level, and this has been discussed and agreed and discussed at length with the department and the Minister and the Deputy Minister. The facilitation was done by the CCMA, which with the consultation of all employees of SAFCON, that was completed. And the research will start at the top. Our focus is around improving operational efficiencies and also to improve the financial performance of SAFCON. You'll see in the presentation that the acting CEO will take us through that the company reported a loss again in 2011. Thank you. I'll hand over to Morena to give us a detailed presentation.
Thank you. In terms of the presentation, I've started on the first slide with the vision and mission and core values of SAFCON. What I'd like to highlight in that slide is that our vision is world-class, and we are currently focusing on a multi-forestry business, and our activities are around integrating the forest and the communities because SAFCON is a rural-based company. In terms of the overview of the presentation, we'll look at the mandate and the strategic objectives, the core operations of SAFCON, the highlights and the lowlights of SAFCON during the 2011 financial year, the issues around governance, and we'll also look at the three key pillars or strategic themes of SAFCON, which is the financial and commercial sustainability, the sustainable forest management, and the last one is the enhanced developmental contribution. We'll also look at the outlook, which is the focus going forward, or the focus that we currently focus area that the company is currently focusing on during the 2012 financial period and beyond that. In terms of the mandate of SAFCON, the mandate of SAFCON is around sustainable management of forests and other assets within the SAFCON group. And also we are expected to enhance the value of the group and play a catalytic role in the realization of the state afforestation, rural development and economic transformation goals. And our mandate is outlined as per the Management of State Forest Act and the strategic objectives that I've highlighted earlier on financial and commercial sustainability, the sustainable forestry management, the enhanced developmental contribution. For the past 2.5 years, SAFCOL has performed on sustainable forest management, the large part of it, and also on the enhanced developmental contribution. However, the company has been making losses since the 2010 financial period. Our cooperations, it's mainly, we've got two mainly operating subsidiaries, which is Pamatiland Forest and also IFLOMA. The other small entities to contribute to the group, however, we are currently looking at the way of deregistering them, since there have been additional requirements in terms of compliance to the New Companies Act. In terms of KLF, the Pamatiland Forest contributes 98% of the total revenue of SAFCOL Group. And within the forest business units, we've got like the research center, the nursery, and we also do the normal silviculture in terms of foresting and also harvesting operations. In terms of our processing, which is a sawmill, we've got our own sawmill, Timber Dollar. It's based at Trando in Limpopo. And we also have Custom Cut, which is more your rented sawmills at Renkeng, John Wright Veneer, and Epoluzi. And basically with the rented sawmill, SAFCOL provides the raw material and we also take ownership of the output from that process. On the core operations, I'll start with the forest operations. That basically the picture there on the slide is showing the value chain within our forest operations. But what I'd like to highlight is that forest currently contributes 54% to our total revenue from the sale of timber or from the sale of logs. And during the financial period, the company introduced what we call the mail delivered strategy, whereby for certain customers, we deliver the logs to their sawmills. And the implication for SAFCOL basically is that the risk and rewards in terms of those products only passes once the logs have been delivered to the customers. And the other part of the logs are sold at roadside, whereby we just harvest and the customer will come and collect them from our plantation. The next slide is the processing operations, which is our sawmills. Our processing currently contributes 37% to the total revenue, and basically it's the sale of the sawn timber or the lumber, and also we do sell like small products like your chips that we also sell within our company. In terms of the highlights and the lowlights of SAFCOL, 2011 marked the 2 years since the decision to privatize SAFCOL was put on hold. The company submitted a 5-year corporate plan during February 2009, whereby we were supposed to focus on dealing with the issues of the land claims, and also the privatization was put on hold then. And in terms of the market, there were no significant improvements on the timber trading conditions. However, the company improved on its sales revenue if you compare what we delivered in terms of the 2010 financial year versus what we have achieved in 2011 financial period. What was also significant in the company was that the 31st March 2011 marked the end of the majority of the long-term timber sales contracts. The company has been having a long-term sales contract since inception, and 31st March, most of the contracts came to an end. And with that challenge, it basically meant that the company needed to introduce new ways of selling its product. Hence, the delivered to mill strategy was introduced to enhance our sales, and we also reviewed the credit terms for our sawn timber customers. And also all our products were sold on an open market process, which was an auction. So we did all that to boost our sales during the 2011 financial period, and there has been improvement if you compare our performance in 2011 versus where we were in 2010. And then on the employment side, there were no job losses to date. The decline in the staff complement that you see on the annual report is due to the just the natural attrition whereby people have resigned. And in terms of the salary increases, the company gave all employees excluding the executive management salary increases during the 2011 financial period. And the definition of executive management was anyone on the E-band in terms of the partisan grading and above. The company continued with the cost-saving initiatives. However, we still realized the loss during the 2011 financial period. I'll unpack in terms of the financial performance on the following slides. And we also had the wet deck inventory, which is the inventory that was harvested during the 2007 and 2008 fires. We were storing them in a wet deck, and they were cleared at the end of the financial period, which basically means that the focus going forward for the companies will be selling fresh timber from to our customers. On the transformation side, both Safcoal and KLF achieved a level 2 triple BEE contributor as per the forestry charter, and which was in line with the target as per the shareholders' compact, and also an improvement if you compare it to 2010. The company is currently having 11 social compacts which were signed with the neighboring communities, and 5 new compacts were signed obviously during the 2011 financial period. On the governance side, the chairperson has already alluded that Safcoal board was reconstituted during the 2011 financial period. An induction was held, the subcommittees were restructured. On the previous annual report, we had 4 subcommittees, namely your transport, the Transformation Committee, Human Resources and Remuneration Committee, FinCo, which is your Finance, Investment and Transaction Committee, and Audit and Risk Committee. The responsibilities for Transco were splitted between FinCo and HR and RemCo. And as a company, we've also reviewed our terms of reference in line with the, which were aligned to the King 3 report on corporate governance and also your Companies Act. And the company received an unqualified audit opinion for the 2011 financial period. If you look at the financial and commercial sustainability KPIs as outlined in the shareholders' compact, we have experienced a loss and hence our financial returns are negative. The EBITDA over revenue is a negative 3.7% and the return on equity was a negative 5%. But what I would like the committee to note is that there has been an improvement as compared to the 2010 financial period, because during 2010 we reported a negative 18.5%, whilst 2011 is a negative 5%. In terms of the gearing, our gearing increased from 0.46% to 1.4%. Basically, the history within the company is that most of our operational capex were financed through our cash reserves. However, during the 2011 financial period, we preserved cash as far as possible, meaning that everything that could be financed using a credit facility, we followed that route. On the working capital management, our cash is currently declining. We had a cash ratio of 1.2, which is a decline from a 1.7 that was reported during the 2010 financial period. Currently, the company is reporting or has reported at year end negative cash flows from operations, which basically means that we are currently not making sufficient cash to cover our operating expenditure. We also had an increase in trade receivables. At the beginning of the presentation, I highlighted that we had to look at extending the credit terms for our lumber customers. And then on the income statement side, we had increased sales revenue. Our performance improved by 63% on the revenue side as compared to 2010. However, the performance was below our budget. We also had a decline in investment revenue, which is in line with a decline in cash. In terms of our expenditure, we used 141 million, which is a decline as compared to the 210 that was reported last year. We also had an improvement in the fair value adjustments. It was a negative 34 million as compared to a negative 342 million that was reported during the 2010 financial period. And we also received a 3 million dividend revenue from Siatkoveka Forestry, which is one of the minorities that we are currently owning, or having 25% of that. On the balance sheet side, we had a decline in the biological asset based on the negative fair value adjustment that I've just alluded to. And we also had a decline in the property, plant and equipment. This was mainly based on the cost saving initiatives that were introduced within the company, which is in line with the cost saving initiatives that we've done on the OPEC side. There was an increase in intangible assets. Towards the end of the financial period, the company embarked on an ERP project, and we bought the licenses during the last month of the financial period. There was a decline in inventory, which I've alluded to, which was as a result of the wet deck stock that was fully sold at year end. The increase in accounts receivable is mainly as a result of the extension of the credit terms that we had with our lumber customers. And all these initiatives were mainly aimed at enhancing our revenue. And we've also received the refunds from SARS. As a result of the loss that we have experienced during the period, we made the retained income declined year on year. And the ERP software, so licenses that we bought them on credit. So there was an increase on other financial liabilities. And there was also an increase on the trade and other receivables. On the cash flow side, in line with the increased revenue that we experienced, we also had an increase in receipts. The interest revenue has declined, as I've alluded to, due to the declining cash reserves. The tax refund that we received was 5.4 million, which we got from SARS. We obviously had lower investment on the CAPEX. We increased our investment in the intangibles. And also, we spent some money on the investment in non-current sales. It was basically the Tsingisi rights offer that we participated on during May 2010. And also, a repayment of a loan that was done by NGO. And as a company, we basically increased the alternative funding, which I've indicated that cash was preserved as far as possible. But if you check the cash movement during 2011 vis-a-vis the 2010, we had an outflow of 26 million, meaning that our cash reserves is currently declining. The investment in privatized entities, have just listed those companies that we currently have shareholding on, and the book value of this investment, which is what we reported on our financial statements, was 295 million, which is an increase from what we reported during 2010. The dividend was received from Siatkoveka Forest. If you look at the funding levels of SAFCOL, the total funding that is currently available is 256 million, or that was available on the 31st of March 2011. 100 million is our own reserve, and the other funding is the multi-option facility and the asset-based finance that we got from Nedbank. On the borrowing side, we had an outstanding debt of 21 million, and I've also indicated the maturity profile in terms of the repayment. The bulk of the money will be paid during the 2011 to 2013 financial period. On the sustainable forest management, we have achieved most of our KPIs, but the one that I think we haven't achieved is on the expansion of the amount of land used for forestry plantations. The company identified two areas for expansion, which was Ifloma Phase 2 and DAF category B and C. And to date, we haven't had yet finality in terms of the decision on the way forward. And then on the FSC side, we have maintained the FSC certification based on the recent audit that was done. And the temporary unplanted area was within target, 2.1%, as compared to the target of 3%. On the fire management side, the company had a minimal area damage by fires during the 2011 financial period. The area that was damaged by fire was 468 hectares, which is a better number if you compare to the three-year average of 7,654 hectares. And part of creating awareness, the company together with other key stakeholders have introduced the Mlilo Fire Awareness. During the 2010 calendar year, we visited 69 schools, which is an improvement of 26 extra schools as compared to the 2010 financial period. The company has also experienced the baboon damage to its pine plantation, and a total of 59 damaged causing baboons have been killed during the current or the 2011 financial period. And if you check the trend during the past 3 years, it brings the total number of baboons killed to 236. The bulk of which was done during the 2009 calendar year. But basically, it's only the problem troops that are killed. The rest of the baboons that goes into our plantations that are killed. On the enhanced developmental contributions, I'm pleased to report that Safcol and Komati Land Forest is a level 2 triple BEE contributor as per the forestry charter. The company performed well in the following pillars: management control, skills development, preferential procurement, and socio-economic development. We have identified areas of improvement, which is your employment equity, especially around disabled employees and black managers, especially at senior and middle levels. Enterprise development is also an area for improvement. The skills development part that could be improved is on the training of disabled employees. Our staff complement at the end of the financial period were sitting at 1,985 employees within Komati Land and Safcol, and 702 employees within IFLOMA. And of the 1,933 permanent employees, 16 employees falls within the category of people with disability, and 20% are females. On the SED side, we have spent 6.2 million during the current financial period. Our target was 7 million. However, the bulk of the money was spent on infrastructure investment. And the other highlights within the enterprise development area, we finalized the MOU and MOU with the DBSA, and we've also partnered with DBSA on the beekeeping cooperative. We've also embarked on the pre-feasibility study on green energy with the DBSA, and we had two timber frame housing that were built as a show unit at Frabo and Rustenburg, and we introduced or we created four new forestry enterprise development that were formed during the financial period, and the total number of ED contractors that have been formed to date is 11. And also what we have decided on as a company is that all SED projects that require infrastructure will be using the timber frame structure. So basically Safcol will be actively driving the concept of timber frame buildings going forward. In terms of the outlook, these are the recent results within the company. It's just the financial and commercial sustainability KPIs for the period that has just ended on the 30th of September 2011. The company has reported a positive EBITDA over revenue. However, I'd like to highlight that this is an accounting profit. It's not a real profit. And on the ROE side, we achieved 1.8%, which is below our 5% target. The gearing ratio has increased to 6.2%. The cash interest cover is a negative 15.5%, which basically means that as the company, we are continuing to generate negative cash flows. We are not generating sufficient cash flows to cover our costs. The current ratio of 3.8 and the cash ratio is concerning of 0.8 as compared to a target of 2%. What I'd like to highlight is that the cash reserves are continuing to decline, and the cash flow from operations, it was a negative 34 million. If you compare the cash reserves at the end of September vis-a-vis what we had on the 1st of April 2011, it shows a decline of 28 million. In terms of the focus going forward, we are currently focusing on implementing the 2012 corporate plan that was submitted to the shareholder. And we are also focusing on the implementation of the business turnaround plan. And we will also be filling key positions that are arising from that turnaround plan. We are preserving cash as far as possible. We are currently busy with the implementation of the ERP system. The continuous improvement of productivity is linked to the business turnaround plan. It's the enterprise resource planning system. And we're also focusing on the socio-economic programs. Basically, it's the implementation of the 11 social compacts that we have signed. We're also focusing on the closing of the gaps that I've highlighted and that we have identified during the BBBE verification. Shareholder management and resolution of land claims remains a key focus for the company in order to improve relationships and to also make sure that the land claims that are the 61% of the land that is currently under land claims is resolved, because this has been identified during Feb 2009. And we haven't made progress in that area to date. In terms of the key risk, and in concluding, I'd like to highlight that if you check on our financials, we've got a damages claim against South Korean government arising from the Lodoloza Papu Consortium, which is currently 3.2 billion. And basically, this is from the decision that was taken by government. 2 years ago, or is it 2 years, yeah, with regard to the discontinuing of the privatization process. The key individuals that dealt with this case within Safcon are no longer with Safcon, and it includes the CEO and also the senior executive for legal, who has just resigned. Another area of concern which affects the sustainability of Safcon is that the 61% of the land that Safcon operates on is under land claims. And if this is resolved and also resolved successfully, Safcon might not have a land to plant its trees. And the last issue is the issue of the financial losses, which is a concern. Our cash reserves are currently declining, and it might impact on the going concern of the company going forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much for this presentation. I think it's clear, and I think on your last two pages, page 24 and page 26, you're really highlighting what are the key issues. Your KPEs, KPIs, financial returns, creditworthiness, and working capital management, not met. KPEs not met. And then also your cash flow operations, your negative 34.4 million, and your declined cash reserves. damages claim, you referred to that. We will come to it about the decision. And then also your land claims. I also referred to your previous CEO's challenges that he mentioned, also referring to this one. Members, it's open. If you can indicate to the secretary just whether you want to ask a question, then we're going to open it up. Mr. Nana, Mr. Kololo, Mr. Mokwena, Mr. Van Dalen, Honorable Bowman. Anybody else for this round? Thank you. Mr. Nana?
Thanks, Chairperson. Well, must I say, it doesn't happen too often that I'm the first one.
Enjoy the moment.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair. No, not complaining. Chairperson, well, the first one, can I commend SAFCOL management and the Chairperson for a brutally frank annual report. Needless to mention that their frankness is actually leading to it's leading to concerns and it's not a very good picture. I don't suggest that I was expecting a better picture, but it looks much gloomier than I thought. And it's depressing to say the least. I'm saying to the person, whilst I appreciate their friendliness, but on my part it's quite depressing. Having said that, Chairperson, I have three questions to ask. The first one, Chairperson, is the land claims, as we have correctly lifted it out. To what extent do these unresolved land claims impact on your relations with the communities? And to what extent such relations can you link to fires that damage your forests? Second one, Chairperson, it's probably a comment that the Chairperson is a lady, the acting CEO is a lady. I'm sure it's an indictment on the two of them. I know you guys are fairly new in the jobs, but it's an indictment on you that we are still sitting at 20% of women in SAFCOL. The ball is entirely in your court. If it means you fire 40% of men, so be it, and replace them with women. No, I'm just joking. No, but I'm saying it's an indictment on you. Something has got to be done about it. No. It's off the record. The third one, Chairperson, is privatization, non-privatization. The acting CEO mentions the decline in cash reserves. To what extent did nationalization? I'm talking like Judas Malema. To what extent did privatization vis-a-vis stalling of privatization impact on your cash reserves? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Kololo.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also thank SAFCOL for the presentation. I've got only two quick questions here. The first one would be that, we're currently importing, toothpick from China. And I just wanted to check, as part of your new growth strategy, you have any future plans, for instance, of setting up a smaller company where you can attract a lot of young people from the rural areas that can look into, you know, producing these toothpicks, for instance. I think you can attract a lot of, you can solve the problem of job creation, especially in the rural areas. And then the second one would be on the baboons that are damaging those trees there. Those baboons, some people actually they do use the meat. Huh? So what do you do with the meat actually?
Thank you, Mr. Khololo. Thank you.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. The Honorable Mokwena.
Yes, Chairperson, a few quick questions, sir. Right. Why did the CEO leave? It's almost a rhetorical question. But then subsumed in that is that was that a proverbial golden handshake? That's the first one. The second one is I'd like to hear more about your R&D, your research and development. What are you doing there in terms of developing the capacity of your R&D, looking at other products to boost your forestry industry? The third one would be what strategies do you have in terms of partnerships with communities? Because you, as South Pole, are not the only ones who are encumbered by land claims. The Department of Environment Affairs and Tourism, the early days, our Civil Committee, they had land claims, you know, the national parks, you know, had the Crenshaw Park and another national park, they had been encumbered by those problems of land claims. Just think of St. Lucia, now called the Smangaliso, they had land claims there. But what they did, they creatively had strategies to partner with communities in order to minimize those land claims and wove those land claimants into business partnerships with them so that they are not hamstrung by those land claims saying, we cannot move because we are surrounded by these land claims. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Van Dalen.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I wanted to know, I see on page number 96 that your debt has also increased from 24.6 million rand to 43.5 million rand. This is money that people are not paying you. What have you got in place to, as a debt management system to collect this money? Why is the debt going up? And how is this affecting you reporting a loss here today? I mean, if that money had come in, then you would have made a profit. So I would spend a lot of time on getting that money in. And why are you not getting it in? And then I see on page number 55 that there's a difference. If you look at the salary of the managerial services and the people's names next door to it, you see the salary they earn and then the contribution they make to medical and retirement. Why is there such a big difference when somebody earns, say, 1.1 million rand and he only pays 75,000 rand to medical and retirement, and then somebody who would be earning 1.1.7 million rand and he would be paying 140,000 rand? Is that extra bonuses that are worked in there so that they can earn a lot of money in the end? And then there's this note at the top that says, it was noted that no director, executive and non-executive received a remuneration increase with effect from the 1st of April. But then if you look on page number 55 and you look at the senior executive for transformation, he did actually receive quite a handsome increase of 200,000 rand, if I'm not mistaken. Can you explain that, please? I would like to know that. And
My good friend, Honorable Holola, asked about the meat of the baboon. But I think those animals look too much like me. So it would be like cannibals. We can't be cannibals to eat the meat, you know. So thank you.
Honorable Bowman.
If I could just ask, on the damages claim that you have noted here on your last slide, and the dismissal of the CEO and the senior executive legal services, am I to assume that it's as a result of what's happened here? I don't know what that means. Key individuals are dealt with no longer with SAFCOM. And then to see that your group's legal advisors say that you stand a very good chance of winning this case. How strong is that? And then I want to just, I'm quite interested here, because I serve on Human Settlements Portfolio Committee, you talk about these wooden frames. I had it here. And you talk about driving this process. I have not seen anything in our department yet, in our portfolio committee, on driving these log houses, these wooden houses, house frames. So just how hard are you driving that? Thank you.
Thank you. Before I hand over, just from my side, I just paged through my notes of last year. And then I pick up what was said, difficulties, business in trouble, what is the strategic intent of DPE on certain issues, Komati land, minority shareholdings, land claims, what are the future of the land claims. You spoke last year about a business as a turnaround plan. And when I look at the presentation now, nearly a year later, I think some of the issues are still there. And there's no change in a year. Same issues, same aspects, it's a rehash. So please put this committee at ease that you did make progress in the last year, because on a bird's eye view, what we heard last year is exactly what we're hearing now. But let me be specific. Your KPIs are not met. I think on page 24 you mentioned the financial returns, credit worthiness, working capital management. Now, what plans do you have to change the situation of meeting the targets on your KPIs? If you look at your diagram of your structure on page 5, then you see there, if I take out dormant subsidiaries and investments held for sale, just ignore that for a moment, or take it out of that organigram, then very little remains of that. And hopefully the Minister of Public Enterprise is not a dormant subsidiary, because it's like the note, it's the same color there. So maybe it's a mistake. But there are a number of dormant subsidiaries. There are at 3. There are 4 investments held for sale. If you solve that, then very little remains of your organic debt. If you can just explain that. And then maybe it will be a question, I don't normally do this, but it must be a question to the DPE on the investment held for sale, 4 of them. A total value, you must help me if I'm wrong, but the 4 investment held in sale, or entities, so 295 million is a value, the book value. So the question is, You say you have a minority shareholding, that is indicated on page 5, 25%, 16, 16, and 16%. And you say you await, last year you said that, this year you say that again. You await government's policy decision for the disposal of the remaining shareholding. Now the question will be to DPE, where is this decision? Because last year it was asked, where's the decision? Now a year later, you say to us, the decision hasn't been taken. And last year, and again, if I read between the lines, and tell me I'm wrong, you, the you still need clarity on the future role of SAFCO. That's what we picked up a year ago. Now, it's 12 months later, we hear the same. What is the future? And then again, the question must go to DPE. Where do we get the clarity on the future role of SAFCO? This was a serious question that the committee engaged in themselves last year with you, and now it's still there. So we need clarity on this. The chairperson's report, you very eloquently in your report state that there's slow progress in the resolution of land claims. In this your annual report here, your chairperson's report. So the question is again, why is there no progress? And why is there so slow progress, both to SAFCO and DPE? So those are the questions that the committee are battling with to understand, in this space of 12 months, why don't we see movement and why don't we see progress? Over to you.
Thank you. The first question that was asked regarding the impact of the unresolved land claims in terms of how does it affect our relationship with the community and also the fires that we're currently experiencing in our plantation. SAFCO has introduced the social compact. I've highlighted that currently we've signed 11 social compacts. Basically, the social compact is more like your memorandum of understanding to guide the relationship that SAFCO is having with the neighboring communities. Our aim is to have social compacts with all the communities that are neighboring our plantations, and SAFCO has got 18 plantations currently. We have signed 11 social compacts, and we create what we call joint community forum, the JCF, whereby we've got representation from the community and representation from SAFCO, whereby we identify the projects that are required in that community. So most of those projects, that's what is covered in our socio-economic development budget. That 6.2 million is the 6.2 million that was paid on projects that were done in conjunction with the community. And the bulk of which was infrastructure, as I've highlighted, and we also provide the support in terms of things that are required at the community. But on the enterprise development side, we basically create entities that generate cash for the community. Obviously, that is still starting. It's at a small scale. I've highlighted that four entities were created during the current financial period, the 2011, and which brings the total to 11. Cooperatives or entities that were created with the community. Obviously, those entities provide a source of revenue for the community, and it also provides employment. And with the fires that we are currently experiencing, SAFCO took a proactive approach in coming with the Mlilo awareness campaign, which was done with the community, and we go out to schools as well. To create awareness in terms of what the impact of fires can be. And obviously that plus the social compact that we have in place sort of improves the relationship that we're currently having with the communities to enable us to protect our assets. So the fires that we experienced during the current financial period, I cannot say they were mainly coming from the community. I do not have proof for that. But we are doing some things in terms of improving our relationship with the community. In terms of the 20% of females in SAFCO, that is noted, and as and when the new structure is populated, we'll take into account the employment equity targets of the company. The privatization and non-privatization, the impact on the declining cash reserves. I'd like to approach this question differently. When the company was told that it's going to privatize, the company stopped in investing in assets like your normal operational capex. That is why you only hear about the enterprise resource planning system now. The company is currently having approximately 26 legacy systems that are not talking to each other. And included in that 36 is your normal spreadsheets. And currently the difficulty is that the turnaround time in producing management reports at month end or at the end of every financial or reporting period, it's currently long. It takes us 2 weeks to get, you know, your management accounts. So the non-privatization or the stalling of privatization actually impacted on us in investing in operational assets like your ERP. And the ERP, the cost was partly financed through a facility. However, the implementation cost is will be financed through our cash reserves. The issue of the declining cash reserves, the cost structure of Safco is too high for the size of Safco. And if you analyze our cost, most of our cost is fixed, meaning that we went through recession, and when the revenue or when the market or external factors changed, our cost, because they were fixed, they did not respond accordingly to the declining revenue trend. And hence we are currently seeing the declining cash reserves. We need to address the cost because we cannot, you know, mainly hope or believe and put our full trust in the increasing revenue, because we are currently experiencing challenges on the revenue side. So the business turnaround plan that we have currently finalized and that we'll be implementing will be addressing the cost side part. The question around the creation of or setting up small companies, I'd like to highlight that I think in 2007 there was a cabinet memo which said that Safco should not further vertically integrate, which means that it puts a restriction in us, you know, opening or taking part down in the value chain. And we are currently liaising with DPE, but the first project that was identified, obviously, was a big project on the vertical integration, which mainly talked about the creation of a big sawmill. And we are still engaging with DPE on that matter, but the cabinet decision is to be uplifted for Safco to be able to partake in those areas. Even though we do not identify the toothpick, let's say factory, we identify things like your furniture as part of our contribution to the NGP. So that is a policy decision that we require in terms of our participation in that regard. On the baboon side, to be honest, I don't know what they do with the meat. I'll follow up and report back to the committee. And then the chairperson will just respond on the CEO question.
There were two questions around the CEO. The first was why did the CEO leave, and the second question was around the legal claim, whether the CEO was fired for that reason. No, he was not fired for that reason, and the head of legal also resigned voluntarily. So that there's no relation between the legal claim and the exit of the CEO and the head of legal. However, with the results of the CEO, the other question was, why did he leave? It was an agreement, a negotiated agreement between the board and the CEO based on difficulties we had with him in terms of performance of the company and his own performance, and also the relationship between the board and the CEO was not working.
Question was, future person, was there any golden handshake? So what was the quantum?
There was no golden handshake, but we had agreed on a annual salary settlement, which is what the CCNA would have asked us to pay him if we had fired him. What is it called? Unfit dismissal. Yeah. So
also were agreed and settled on an annual salary. That's all the stage. We are in dispute right now because he's claiming bonuses for previous years, and we're going for arbitration. Arbitration. Going to arbitration with regard to the bonuses that he's claiming for the 2009-2010 financial year and
2010-2011 financial year. Yeah, why are we asking this question, Chairperson, is that you should be upfront with this information, otherwise they get sensationalized through whistleblowing and through the press, etc., etc. And we as a professional committee do not want to be guilty of dereliction of duty having been asked these questions. I think you should be proactive in disclosing this in the annual reports.
It will be disclosed in the next annual report. This is the previous financial year. This thing happened in September, so in the next annual report, we'll disclose the payments here. And the Deputy Minister has been kept abreast on all the discussions and negotiations and settlements.
On the question regarding the research and development, the current research facility that South College is having is focusing mainly on forest. But during the drafting of the business turnaround plan, we've identified that the research role needs to be sort of uplifted within the company so that it can focus on the full value chain. But however, some of the things that we're also involved in is the nursery at Sabi area, and we are currently making available like seedlings to those forestry companies that are interested in buying the seedlings. But the bulk of it is mainly used for our internal consumption. In terms of the strategies for partnering with the communities, it basically relates to the social compact that I've alluded to, which is more your MOU, and also the forums that we've created, that we've set up with those communities. And the reason why we are involved in this, we are having the social compact, we're trying to position SAFCOL as a preferred partner with these communities, especially post the settlement of the land claims, because if the land claims are settled, and or when the land claims are settled and settled successfully, we'd like to enter into some kind of arrangements where we can continue to use the land that the communities will be owning. The question around the debt going up.
Chairperson, with the permission.
Okay.
No, the point is not to settle the community and then have partnerships, but it is factored in the deal with the community that now lawyer land claims, so now we can marry you, have a business relationship. That is the essence of what they say. Look at that option. It will not avoid prolonged adversarial land claims.
The role of settling land claims reside with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. So hence, from SAFCOL side, we are mainly trying to position ourselves so that we can sort of have a healthy relationship even post land claim, because what SAFCOL requires is the land that we can be able to lease in order to advance our what you call our business.
We will get a second round. Just finish your answer of this round.
Okay, there was a question regarding the debt that is going up on page number 96.
Yes,
I've highlighted that the company embarked on or reviewed the credit terms on our lumber customers. Basically, the reviewed credit terms, what we mainly do, we're extending the term. Say, for instance, the term was 60 days. We extended the term to 90 days. And basically, we've done that to enhance ourselves, our revenue, because we had to do something in order to encourage the people to sort of increase the uptake of our product, and hence you'll see an increase in the sales or in the revenue, and also a corresponding increase on the debt side, on the accounts receivable. But what we can take comfort on is that our debt or bad debt or written off it hasn't increased, mainly because we are continuing focusing on following up on the debt and also on receiving the cash that is due to the company. The question on the salaries, currently, you know, the employees have got a choice in terms of belonging to a medical aid. They have to belong to a medical aid, but some medical aid deductions are done via payroll. Others are done via debit order, which is outside the payroll process. I'll sort of use myself as an example. If you look at that report on page 55, it appears as if I'm not contributing to any medical aid. I do contribute to a medical aid, however, it's done via a debit order. And then in terms of the contribution to the retirement fund, the majority of the people are contributing to the retirement fund. It's only few people within EXCO that have moved from the previous fund that are currently not contributing. The company is covering the retirement fund contributions. You've raised the issue regarding the increase. The amounts that are actually disclosed on page 54 and 55 is the total remuneration that a person received during any financial period, meaning that if you've traveled, let's say, around our operations in South Africa, you would have received a travel allowance or you would have been reimbursed for business kilometers. That amount is actually included in the amount that is disclosed on our financials. We include sort of the total remuneration for the financial period. And I'd like to confirm again that no EXCO members or no executive management received an increase during the 2011 financial period. So all those people that you see on page 54 and 55 did not receive an increase, except for the chief internal auditor. The chief internal auditor, in terms of the grading, she fell below the event in terms of the partisan grading. And also, there were no bonuses that were paid to the EXCO members during the 2011. And the question regarding the dismissal of a CEO and SE legal, I think that it has been dealt with by the chairperson. Those people, they have resigned. Regarding the difficulties, yes, the difficulties that were highlighted last year and this year, they sort of look more or less the same. But I'd like to deal with the issue of the turnaround plan. The company focused on developing a turnaround plan during the 2011 financial period, and we've also disclosed in our annual report that it was discussed with the shareholder and with the shareholder and DPE. But there were further developments that happened during the current financial period between April and September. We embarked on CCMA facilitated process, where we had to solve the case for change, and those meetings were concluded during, actually the last meeting was on the 14th of October. Currently we do have a revised turnaround plan, which basically deals with the executive level, and according to that revised plan, which was supported or approved by the board, it reduces our EXCO from 11 members to 4 members. There were new positions that were identified, and the focus going forward between now and January, it will be on the filling of those positions. Obviously, the first position will be the CEO position. We also have the COO, Chief Operations Officer position, and also the Senior Executive for Human Capital Management and Transformation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the fourth person is myself, and I'm here. The turnaround plan basically was aimed at addressing the issues of the KPIs that are currently not met. There were some initiatives that were included in our corporate plan to DPE, which focused on the revenue enhancement. However, those initiatives are also on a small scale, because I've highlighted earlier on that we need to deal with the costs as the company, because our cost structure, it's currently fixed, the bulk of it, and also the overhead is too high for the size of the company. Oh, the timber framed housing. Yes, we are currently, I'm not sure if we have had any interactions with the Department of Housing, but currently we have built the ones that are highlighted in the report. And also all the SED projects that we're currently doing, be it, let's say, the schools in terms of extension of classes or the clinics. I know another one that we're doing is the sort of the accommodation for another school. We are currently using the timber frame structures in all those projects. And obviously, we're also going out. One of the items or the projects that was highlighted, it was the Royal Bafokeng Show House that was built. Obviously, we still need approval from that side in terms of expanding, in terms of the structure. But it is a focus going forward. And also in the Eastern Cape, just to highlight, lately we the company had an interaction with the or agreement with the MMI Foundation, the Metropolitan, what do you call it? Metropolitan Momentum, yeah, Foundation, where we built a health center for them in the Eastern Cape using the timber that we currently have. So it is a drive going forward because we recognize that it's an alternative source of revenue, and we can definitely improve on that, and also assist, let's say, some other sister companies or departments that are, you know, lagging behind in terms of their objectives.
On the framework for the minority shareholding and the future of SAFCO, I think the department would be in a better position to respond.
The last one is the dormant, maybe subsidiaries. Most of the subsidiaries have been dormant, and in terms of the reporting or in terms of the financial, you know, contribution to the group is very, very minimal. But what we have done as a group, we have decided to review them so that we can deregister them, because with the new Companies Act, the new legislation that are or new compliance requirements that have been added, so it's better to open a new company should we need one in future. So currently we are exploring closing most of those dormant companies that are highlighted in our structure. And the colouring in terms of the Minister of Public Enterprise, I think that was a typo, and apologies for that.
No problem, that was on a lighter note. Can I ask, DPE, do you want to come in now, or can we, let's give you a chance?
Thanks, Chairperson. On the minority shareholding, I think you will, as you have indicated, that you know these are the issues that were raised previously, and on this one, we have engaged with the Department of Rural and Land Reform, because post land claims they have to monitor these shares, because they are supposed to go to the communities. What they've indicated to us is that currently they don't have the capacity to or a vehicle to manage these shares. What they've resorted to do is they've looked at other alternatives, such as, you know, getting an independent company as an asset manager to look after this investment. But we have not received any formal correspondence in this regard. In fact, what we, in terms of the shareholders agreement, when the four privatized entities were privatized, these shares were earmarked for the communities and were supposed to go to the to a community trust. But they've since said, well, look, you know, the communities, they don't have the capacity to look after these, and as a result, we must look at other alternatives. We've seen that, and then we approached NEF, which it was willing to look after these shares on behalf of the communities, and also try and capacitate the communities and bring them in, you know, into the whole picture. But Rural and Land Reform came back to us and said, well, look, you know, in terms of the mandate, they are mandated to look after this area, and as a result, they will do this. Then later they came back to us and said, well, look, we don't have capacity. We need to look at other alternatives. We met with them two weeks ago, and they said, well, look, they're looking at other alternatives, and they'll come back to us. We have never received any formal response in regard to this. And then with regard to clarity on the future role of SAFCOL, I'm pleased to report to you that there are renewed efforts within the department to finalize the future, the strategy on the future role of SAFCON. We have the work is at a very advanced stage. We have engaged with other stakeholders such as DTI, National Treasury, and EDD, and they have raised a number of issues like number of competition issues on vertical integration, and we have since decided that before we could, you know, even communicate SAFCON's strategy, we need to do or conduct an economic impact assessment, because there were a number of competition issues that were raised, and we're hoping to finalize this work within this current financial year, in which regard we will approach cabinet for a decision on this. And then also, I think I also like to touch on the progress, just an update on the progress with regard to the resolution of land claims. The Department of Rural and Land Reform is the lead department on this. However, as GPE, we have since taken an active role, because we've got an interest in this whole area, because we want to finalize this, and we have since reconstituted a land claims task team, which meets on a quarterly basis to see how this matter can be finalized. And in fact, we were told, we met with them about a week ago, and they said to us, well, they are looking at other settlement only because the Minister of Land Reform and Land Reform is not in favor of the current model. The model that was used by Mondi and SAPI, they said, well, look, you know, it does not benefit the community at all. And they are looking at other, you know, alternatives, and they will communicate that to us once that model has been finalized. However, we have also said, well, look, you know, we're not going to sit down and just fold our hands and wait for you to come to us. We'll also look at other models as well and propose them at our next task team meeting. But I must say, well, this is also being taken care of, and we hope the matter will be finalized soon.
Thank you for that clarity, and I think as a committee we can just ask you to give serious attention to this, because all the issues you are explaining now are affecting SAFCO directly. Deputy Minister?
Chair, if I may, it's in the best interest of the department to have operational certainty for SAFCO. The issues that the chair spoke about, the history of SAFCO, is one that we are all familiar with, namely that at one stage, cabinet in its wisdom decided that the entity should be privatized. Then later on, there's been a review with regard to the earlier decision not to privatize. And then, in the best interest of the adjacent communities, then what also happened was that there were a number of land claims that have a direct impact on SAFCOL to operate at its maximum capacity. Then, as my colleague on my right has just mentioned, he mentioned a number of departments. But the reality is that members of the community have had opportunity to meet with the traditional leaders in all these areas, and also interest groups from the various communities. They come knocking at the door of the Department of Public Enterprises. They don't understand that there are policy responsibilities that we have, but certain functions vest in other departments, like the Department of Public Works, as the landlord of government. There's also the Department of Rural Affairs. So they don't understand all those intricacies. So we took the responsibility upon ourselves to coordinate the functions of all the core relevant departments that affect all those communities, and reactivated a interdepartmental committee that had become dormant over the years, so that when people come to us, we are able to provide them with all the answers, not to say go to this department, they get to other department, they are sent from pillar to post. So I'm merely trying to summarize to say that we are au fait with the responsibility of bringing closure to the community where they can relate to the South African Forestry Company and also see the communities benefiting from the activities of the company. At the same time, we are also aware of the operational constraints that the company has in order to be able to function at the maximum level. There's the issue that has been highlighted here with regard to vertical integration. If the company is allowed to carry out other functions, it can have a more profitable balance sheet. There's also the issue of the department cabinet having to decide ultimately on the basis of the advice given by the department, the ministry in particular, our relationship with our forest interests in Mozambique. Are those in the best interest of South Africans? How do we better deal with that issue? So all those issues, the policy issues, we have them on board and would seek resolution to them at the earliest possible juncture. And as I said in the previous engagement when the previous report was given by the other entity, is that at the future date, we would come to the portfolio committee with all these issues and give greater details in regard to the entities that fall under the remit of public enterprises to say that overall these are the state-owned companies. This is the way forward in regard to the challenges that has been highlighted during this annual report process. There are issues that come up, but they can't all be resolved within the time limit of today. So those issues, we as the department would come back and interrogate and further discuss them with the portfolio committee. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. I'm going to ask a last round because it's already now 10 past 1 and the plenary bells will start to ring. It's a joint sitting. So just indicate to me, Mr. Van Dalen, Mr. Mokwena. Mr. Van Dalen?
Yes, I see on page number 25, I see that the SAF call has got the total black employees is 93%. Now, I would like to know, you know, what is the national demographics? Is it in line with that, or how does it differ with that? And, you know, what is good for the goose must be good for the gander. So you can't over-DEE, you know. You must keep the levels right. So this looks like a black male-dominated company, you know. So we need to change that if there is a problem. And what are you doing to do that? I see you only have 20 colored employees and only 6 Indian and 132 black and 1,775 black African people working there. So can you please help me with that?
Mr. Mokwena?
We over, if I shall call a visit. That's a refreshment memory. When are we going to go there?
Going in the week of the 29th, we're going to SAFCO. We will liaise with you. But the committee is going on an oversight visit to a number of state-owned entities, state-owned companies, and SAFCO will be one of them. So we will liaise with you to... It's better for us, we learn, to go physically with you on the ground and see for ourselves what's happening, rather than come to a committee room and explain to us what's happening. So we will follow this report up with a practical visit, thank you, Mr. Mokwena, to SAFCO. Any other questions?
Chairperson.
Mr. Nana?
For a moment, I thought that Honorable Van Dalen is the supporter of affirmative action. I thought it was because of last Friday's vote.
Any other questions? Chairperson, CEO, it's over to you.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to highlight that the majority of the black people that you referred to are the blue-collar workers. Yes, within the plantations, the majority of the employees in the plantations, in forest, and also in processing, the laborers are black female. So the, I mean black male. So the focus for the company is mainly on middle management and on senior management, because that's where our numbers are not in line with the demographics of the country.
And we do hire white males if they want to work in the forest or the plantation. When they apply, we do hire them.
What are you doing to get them if you have a shortage of them? I mean, are you training them up to be blue-collar workers?
Huh? No, they are here.
The demographics say they are here.
Let's have order. Have you finished your questions?
Yeah, that's the only question. The only question was around white employees and forestry.
Can DPE, you done? Safco, you done?
Yes.
On this note, I'm going to bring this meeting to a close. Can I thank all members for your participation, your questions that you've asked, and the studying of this report we really appreciate from my side. DPE, thank you for your contribution and your valuable helping and assisting as a shareholder to SAFCO, the special efforts that you make and the clarity for giving and working on key issues to make the life better for SAFCO as well. We really appreciate that. Deputy Minister, especially to you for attending this meeting, we really appreciate that you took the time and the effort to come and be next to SAFCO and address the issues that is of concern. And then to the CEO and the chairperson, CEO, and acting CEO and CFO and chairperson. Thank you for your time. We will be seeing you in a couple of weeks' time. We really appreciate your time that you took us to come. And we wish you well in SAFCO. SAFCO, if you travel through the country, it's when you go to Mpumalanga, Mr. Khololo's home background, it's always a pleasure to see your forestries and the sawmills and the activity. It's a national asset. And we're proud of SAFCO. And we want to support you. You have major achievements, but major challenges as well. And regard us as a portfolio committee, as partners, to assist you to become even better. Thank you. It's now commercial for Mr. Khololo.
Just to comment, SAFCO, actually, they're doing a very beautiful job in Mpumalanga, especially in my constituency. I know of many projects that they're doing, especially with the communities, building crutches. Right now, they are about to build another smaller school in my constituency with a new CEO for Mr. Palmas from Pretoria. So I must say, really, they're doing a very good job.
Thank you, sir. A closing word from you? Do you want a closing word from you? Do you want a closing word? You're done.
Thank you. I would like to thank especially the Deputy Minister of Public Enterprises for supporting us, and the Department and the Minister, and also the Portfolio Committee for receiving us and listening to our challenges and our progress. Thank you very much.
Deputy Minister, you want to say a final word?
None, Chair. On a different occasion, SAFCOL have not informed the community as to the good they are doing in building schools and classrooms. On a different occasion, I'll speak to that. I went to see for myself and opened the school. Thank you.
On that high note, the meeting is adjourned.